Welcome into a special Crosstown Shootout edition of the Dana and Victory podcast. I am Rick, and I am joined by Dan, per usual. This is going to be a marathon podcast. Hopefully it's something you can listen to maybe throughout your day before the shootout, or in parts as you're going throughout the next few days. But hopefully you guys will enjoy it. I've tried to gather all the heavyweights and relevant people in Cincinnati media, tried to get them all together and talk about the shootout, ask them some questions. So that'll come at the end of this podcast. But first, I think we want to just take a trip back in time and talk memories here. Give me your favorite. I asked all the other people that you're going to hear from later what their favorite shootout memory was or shootout moment. What is it for you?
Well, I want to start off by saying what, like, my first shootout memory is.
Oh, okay. Yeah. When it, like, first came on your radar?
Yeah, exactly. So I, as we've talked about on the show before, I started going to games when I was a little kid, like 6, 7 years old. So that had been the mid-80s. But the one thing during that period of time was I never got to go to the Crosstown Shootout because that was the game that my mom would use the other ticket and would get a babysitter. So the first Crosstown Shootout that I remember watching was the 1990 game at the Gardens, overtime game. Xavier won 90-88, and my memory has dulled on this, so I apologize in advance. I may have the particulars backwards, but I think Michael Davenport, like, hit the game-winning shot for Xavier, and maybe Jamal stole a pass or something at the end of the game to preserve the win. I may have that backwards. I remember there being, like, an almost criminally bad call that went Xavier's way down the stretch to help preserve the win, and that's the first one that I really remember, but I think when things really kicked up in this rivalry was when Huggins came in at UC and UC's program started on the upward trajectory they had to the point that they were obviously a national power in the 1990s and early 2000s. And that was when the rivalry really got intense. The first game I went to was the 94 game, which was the overtime game at the Gardens. That's the famous no handshake, Huggins smashing the scores table, knocking Andy Mack off the air.
Sure.
It was all happening in that game, and you can actually find, for those of you who are younger who may not have ever seen the highlights of that game, I think somebody put it up on YouTube recently, like the overtime and some of the last few minutes of the game, and you get a sense of just how ridiculously crazy the Gardens was that night, especially when Jeff Massey, who's now on the staff at Toledo, is that right? He was at St. Bonaventure for a while.
If you say so.
Hit two huge threes in the second half, or in the overtime of that game, that gave Xavier the advantage that they ended up winning, and that was a memorable experience. But the first one I remember was that 1990 game.
Yeah, I can't remember. Like, I don't remember the first game that jogs my memory, but like the ones that stand out is the Lenny Brown shot is probably the first one that really stands out. The call from Andy Mack was, I just remember being in my grandpa's house hearing that and it was like, I was hooked on this game from that point forward. And there were so many other great moments. I remember being in my great grandma's house because we didn't have cable when I was growing up. And I mean, I never saw my great grandmother ever, like literally not once a year, not once every 2 years. It was like, I probably saw her like a 3 times total in my life before she passed away. And she didn't pass away until I was like a senior in high school. So I never saw this lady, and yet we were in her house before the Crosstown Shootout because she had cable and we didn't for one random night. And I remember Kenyon Martin, that was the year, you know, Dickie V, stay tuned, call up your friends, number one's going to be knocked off, and Kenyon Martin flexing into the camera and my great grandmother saying she was going to write letters to the university about that. So I remember that one very vividly as well. Just so many good. I love this game. Like, this is the ultimate to me. I'm jacked from the second the Georgetown game ended. I've just been wired about this, and I can't wait. But I'll be honest. Like, I don't think people like hearing it, but the Brawl game is one I've really like. That was an. I was so green still in terms of getting to cover this stuff and being in major sporting events like that, and like, actually covering, you know, like, I had run cameras and stuff like that for NFL Network, but being like really legit covering it and putting in a thought out there afterwards that people were going to read or whatever, and just that happening and everyone's national focus turning towards that game, and like, I gained like hundreds of Twitter followers that day, and it was just such a wild event, and you like actually felt like you were doing real work just covering and sports.
That was like take-pocalypse too for the next 2 months. And I will be perfectly honest. I am part of the problem as far as the takes that came out after that game. But
I was all over it. And I'm still making takes on that game. To be quite honest, I'm waiting until Mick and Mac leave so I can do a documentary about the day. To be quite honest, That game, I loved that game. It was so interesting and so entertaining. And then fallout from it, too.
What the funniest thing about that is, though, Rick, is that is that 2 years prior to that game, 2 years prior to the Brawl game, or no, I'm sorry, 4 years prior to the Brawl game, in 2008, so that would have been Mick's third year at UC, maybe. And so UC was terrible. They were still running out, you know, football players, and they had like seven guys. And they played Xavier at CentOS, and Xavier was an 18-point favorite. X ended up winning 64-59 after trailing for most of the game. And that game, I thought, was the one that was going to end in a fight. And I think there was actually at least one situation where a guy had to be pulled off a pile in that game. It was the most physical game I've ever seen. And I think Mick's philosophy in that game was just, let's beat them up and see if they're up to the physical challenge of this game. And they put that into practice, and that was a game that I thought was going to end in a fight. The 2011 game, I mean, yeah, there was an unbelievable amount of woofing. You had the whole freeze gate soap opera. But it was also like a blowout, and if the walk-ons had been in, probably nothing happens. But that game in 2006 2008, I guess, or probably late 2007, was one that's really memorable to me. But we should probably talk about this year's game.
Real quick, the first game I covered, and this, I wasn't running the site yet, it was still B Snow. I was taking pictures for him, so I was sitting on the baseline underneath Xavier's hoop right next to their bench, which made it interesting because that was Chris Mack's first year with the team. So that was the Jordan Crawford, Lance Stevenson year, and the game goes into double overtime, and Xavier pulls it out 83-79 to Holloway, Jordan Crawford doing things. But also there was the jawing going on between Lance Stevenson and Chris Mack during the game. That was just incredibly hilarious to watch courtside there. So I love this game. So many memories. Let's talk about this year's, like you said. Dan, what's the reason for optimism from the Xavier fan perspective?
Okay, I'm coming strong with this one.
All right.
I think that if Xavier plays well and UC plays well, Xavier wins. Because I think Xavier is a better team with a higher ceiling than UC is. But the problem is, with every positive, there's a cloud to every silver lining. Xavier hasn't played real well yet this season. And so the odds of them popping into form in game 20 in a hostile environment against a really good team, and I do think UC is a really good team, it doesn't seem like something you would bet the mortgage on. So that's what gives me hope in this game, is that you've got a Xavier team that has a lot of talent, that has a lot of guys that obviously have that ceiling. I really think that Xavier is one of the few teams that UC will play this year that will not be physically intimidated by them. They're a team that might be able to, that should be able to hold their own on the glass, which is huge, especially the defensive glass. But it's going to take hitting shots, and that, as we know, it's going to take hitting shots and not having stupid lapses on defense. And both those things, unfortunately, have been struggles for Xavier over the course of the season, the entire season, not just these last couple weeks where they dropped the three league games. So, you know, like I said the last time we talked, I see better than I hear. And until I see Xavier come out and put that effort together against an elite-level team like UC is this season, it's a little bit tough for me to believe it's going to happen. But that's not to say it won't. And certainly there have been situations where Xavier has played up for these rivalry games. And traditionally, I think if you look at the scores over the past 15, 20 years, traditionally the team that feels like they should be the favorite going in, and I think UC should be the favorite going in, tends to be the team that maybe doesn't bring as rabid of intensity into the game. So that's what I'm going to be looking for, is can Xavier hit shots early, and can they maintain defensive discipline over the course of the evening? And if they do those two things, they got a shot. They got a puncher's chance. But yeah, that's what gives me hope. but it's tempered by sort of realistically looking at the trajectories of the two teams thus far this season.
Yeah, so I think you have to mention the possibility of an outlier performance, right? And right now, if Xavier were to come out and shoot like they've shot the past few years against Cincinnati and play really well offensively on the road against a good team, you'd have to consider that an outlier performance. Like you said, they'd be playing up to the rival in this case. I don't think it's fair to expect that. I don't think it's reasonable to expect that from Xavier right now with what we've seen this far.
The other thing is that with UC, let's say the last three seasons, I don't know if that's fair. Probably, at least the last 2 years, but maybe the last three. You had this sort of calamity cats aspect to them, right? Mm-hmm. Where when it got down, if it was a close game down the stretch, UC didn't make plays, or they had ridiculous things happen to them. Like outlier events seemed to happen to them every time they're in a close game, you know, like a UConn guy throwing the ball in from 70 feet or something like that. This year, UC has been really proficient in closing out games, and they've also been really proficient in keeping teams at bay even when they're struggling offensively. You think about the East Carolina game on the road a couple weeks ago. That was the kind of game that UC and the AAC the last couple of years, playing a bad team on the road, not being able to hit shots, not being able to pull away. That was the kind of situation where that last four-minute war, that team throws in a couple threes and UC folds up the tents and loses. They didn't do that. They didn't do it against SMU. They didn't do it against Temple. They've been able to manage the end game in those situations. So, meanwhile, from the Xavier perspective, you know, last year Xavier played one close game all regular season, and that game really wasn't that close. And then, really, they don't have the reps in close games, like Chad Brendel was talking about in a take that I'm still convinced was filched directly from me, but maybe that's just great minds thinking alike.
I think it would be smarter of Brendel if he were listening to the Dana and Victory podcast to get ideas to tell him smart about Xavier and turn Xavier fans to his side on the Skinny podcast. I think it's part of his master plan. I don't hate it. I think it's a decent idea by him.
Well, like I told you, I'm going to start from now on, I'm going to start seeding our podcast with garbage takes to see if Brendel takes the bait. I have any garbage takes, that's why.
Yeah.
And then when you look at individual matchups in this game, I think the thing that UC has this year that they haven't had previously is they just have a lot more skill offensively. You know, Copain hasn't been great this year. I can't say that I've watched every UC game, but I've watched a fair number of their games. Copain has probably not had the kind of season you would expect from him.
But he's playing better recently.
Right, but I think part of that is that he's no longer the focal point of their offense in a lot of ways. I mean, Jacob Evans is a really good scorer. They're getting a lot from Jerron Cumberland off the bench, and then Gary Clark who's you know one of my favorite players that's come through at UC just because of the diversity of his skill set, both offensively and defensively. He can post up. He gets lots of rebounds. He can step out on the floor. He's shown a little bit more of that mid-range game this year. I really like his game. I think he's a problem for Xavier. And then you add on that sort of the traditional UC big men that are going to contest everything around the rim. I mean, they create a lot of problems for Xavier. And now it's not just about trying to ugly it up and make it a 60-55 game. They've got guys that can actually hit shots, that can get out and run, that can go downhill, that can finish. They create a lot of problems for this Xavier team.
My thing with UC's defense is they're really good defensively. There's no way around that. Xavier has to punish them for playing Kyle Washington one because he has no desire to be tough on the defensive end. He has no will. He'll let you post wherever you want and catch the ball wherever you want. And Xavier, one, their bigs have to take advantage of that and then also finish if they get the opportunity. But two, the guards have to look for them as well, and they
right.
have to feed them the ball, and they haven't done that at all recently. And
no.
maybe for good reason. I don't know that I'd have a ton of confidence in those guys either, But in this game, it might be a necessity because I think you have to make UC pay for keeping Kyle Washington on the court because he's so good offensively at times and he's going to be a problem for Xavier to defend. You better make sure you're making UC pay for it at the other end because he can be a liability on defense at times. And then another part of that their defense is when Justin Jennifer comes into the game, which he's playing a little more than I ever expected him to play for this program, you've got to punish. There's no one on Xavier's roster for him to guard. They have to attack him. He's okay. He does a decent job, but he's 5'10". You know, he's 180 pounds, whatever he is. You've got to attack him. He's not a good athlete. You got to go right at him. He's a guy that you can definitely take advantage of, and other teams have done that in the American Conference, especially the teams, you know, that are familiar with UC, know their personnel, know who to attack. That's what you've seen. That's where you've seen them have success is by attacking those two spots. So I think Xavier has to do that in terms of how you're going to get after UC's defense.
And the other issue is Xavier has to be – They can't be sloppy. They can't be. They have to find a way to value possessions. They have to find a way to value opportunities. And even against Georgetown, they were sloppy. There were bad turnovers in the. There were a couple unforced turnovers around the midcourt stride. I remember one time where Bernard and I think it was Sumner just basically ran into each other on a basic handoff, not even guarded, and the ball goes out of bounds. And you can't have those mental lapses. You can't have – because UC will make you pay with pick six turnovers.
In the same way that
they're not as good in transition as Creighton is. Creighton at full strength is. But and when you look at, like, the way that Kamar Baldwin was able to pick on J.P. McCura and Trayvon Blewett in certain situations and get steals and runouts, that's ominous when you look at UC because they love to get up in your grill – especially when they do kind of, and I don't know whether it's really a matchup zone, but a lot of times you'll see their three guards kind of get really aggressive with their defense in the in sort of the area between, like, say, the left and right posts. And Xavier's got to be careful there. They can't be just throwing the ball away. They can't be sloppy. And the same thing goes with finishing underneath and hitting free throws. I mean, Xavier's going to have to be exacting in this game. They cannot be sloppy. I keep coming back to that word, but that is the thing that has defined that's the word that comes to mind when I think of Xavier this year is just being sloppy and not efficient and not taking advantage of opportunities when they've had them this year, especially in games against good teams. Because as we know, Xavier's what 0-4 against the RPI top or the KenPom top 25. Mm. And in those games, you know, Villanova you can maybe throw away, but Baylor. That game turned on Xavier not being able to stop a huge run. Colorado, that game turned on Xavier not being able to stop a huge run, committing turnovers, missing open shots, missing free throws that could have stemmed the tide. Butler, similar thing. Xavier up 6 points at halftime. All of a sudden they can't get a stop for what seems like an hour and a half. And against Creighton, as you said, down the stretch, Chris Mack calling great sets from the sideline and guys missing opportunities. I don't know that I think if they continue to be wasteful in those situations, it's going to be the same result as those other games, and they're not going to be able to hang in the second half, and they lose. If they are efficient, if they find another gear, then I think they can and maybe should win this game. But if it's a typical Xavier performance from this year, it's going to be tough.
XU, like your point's a good one. XU can't turn it over, and they do have to make some shots down the stretch, or they're not going to win this game regardless. Now, if they do those things, if they take care of the ball and they make some shots and they give themselves a chance, my question then becomes, I think the big variable after that point is, what does Mick do with his offense? Because this UC team, I looked it up last night, Dan, they're averaging 1.19 points per possession and shooting 59.9% from the field in transition. That's 18th in the country. It's better than Kentucky. It's better than UCLA in terms of efficiency when they're in transition. And in terms of, like, the teams ahead of them in those top 17 spots, Virginia's there. Other than that, I don't think it's many high majors. It's lots of teams beating the hell out of crappy teams in their conference that they're much better than. So UC is an elite team in terms of high majors at finishing in transition. And I think it's because Jacob Evans is a monster in transition. Troy Copain is much better in transition than he is grinding it out in the half court. Jaron Cumberland can provide offense in transition. He's a smart player, a good outlet passer, a good shooter. So they have more weapons in transition. I think Gary Clark benefits from running the court as well and playing faster.
Yeah, because he can. Well, because he has such a nose for the ball mm-hmm. that he's the perfect guy to have trailing the break, because he's the guy that can collect those garbage baskets around the rim if the first guy misses.
So if, my question is, if Xavier doesn't give up a bunch of pick sixes and make it easy runouts that anyone's going to finish in transition, is UC going to make it a point to push the ball when they get a rebound and get out and run? Or is it going to be more like what we've seen from Mick in some of UC's bigger games this year, specifically games on the road, but also, you know, some of the bigger ones at home, where he wants more control of the offense and he slows it down and he runs more sets? If he does that, I think the game swings into Xavier's favor a little bit, because I think if UC just gets out and scores, I think they're good enough. I think Xavier will trade baskets enough that I think UC will probably just outscore them on their home court. I think they'll outshoot Xavier with the way Xavier's been showing without some type of outlier performance from the Musketeers. So I think a lot of this is on Mick's strategy, and I really think a faster game plays into UC's, more possessions play into UC's favor, and the lower grinded out win on toughness favors X. They're the better rebounding team. They're not quite as good defensively, but they're also playing a much tougher schedule, and I think they're a pretty tough, cohesive, consistent group that playing with some extra energy and fire in a rivalry game are going to be pretty tough to score on without making a bunch of jumpers. So,
all right. Well, I think we've probably talked long enough. There's a lot of people with intelligent things to say coming. So what are sort of your closing thoughts? Any sort of topics you want to hit before you I'm sort of like the rabbit in the 10,000 at the Olympics who just blew himself out after half a mile before I retire.
I think I am going to have plenty of takes out there, and I've said all I need to say. Did you give us a score prediction earlier? I can't remember. Have you said that yet?
I didn't.
Okay, what is the score prediction? I'm asking everyone on this podcast for an actual score.
I think, so going back to your last comment, I think you're right. I think UC benefits if they try to run. I don't think they will, because I think that when coaches get it, if this is a tight game, coaches go back to their security blanket. It's like Urban Meyer, you know, running that quarterback keeper over and over in tight games. And I think if it gets to be a tight game, Mick will go to the security blanket, the grind it out, sort of half court offense, slow it down. The last three games, all of which Xavier won, have ended up with the winning team in the 60s. I think that probably is where we're going to be in this one. I think UC probably takes it 68-62. Don't at me. I'm not a Hack Creighton fan. I'm trying to be objective given what I've seen from both teams so far. And that, by the way, doesn't necessarily mean Xavier had a bad night. I just think UC's really good. They're playing at home. They've lost three straight in this rivalry. They've lost 8 of 10 in this rivalry. They're going to be keyed up. This is the, you know, I hate to do this because you were taking Twitter heat about it today, but I don't really think that beating SMU is that impressive. I think beating Xavier is more impressive mm-hmm. for UC. This would be, depending on how you feel about Iowa State, this would be either their biggest win or their second biggest win of the season. So I think they're going to be on point in this game, and I would expect a narrow UC win.
National brand matters, I think, and Xavier's got the much bigger brand over SMU, and it's not a conference team. I think this is a huge win for UC. I think your pick's a fair one. I'm going Cincinnati 67, Xavier 64. Dan, enjoy the game, my man.
There's no way I'm going to enjoy this game.
How will your dad be acting right during this game?
What's that?
How will your father be acting during this game?
Well, I think that we're dividing the family up between two houses because, of course, we have some UC interlopers that have married into the family. So I don't know. It will remain to be seen. He may just get into a funk. Where after about 5 minutes, he tells himself that Xavier's going to lose because it's like 9-6 UC, and then he's not heard from much, or he may be completely off the chain. Well, it's TBA. I'll report back the next time we talk.
All right. Sounds good. Well, I got plenty more people to talk to, so let's tip the rest of these interviews off with one of my favorite sportscasters in town from Fox 19. Joe Daneman is with us. He and Jeremy Rau killing it on the Fox 19 news with the sports reports. Joe, you guys are doing an awesome job. Thanks for joining us.
Rick, I appreciate it, man. First time with the podcast. I'm a longtime listener. First time I actually get to be on.
We will. I'll slip you a five next time I see you in the CentOS media room for saying that. Joe, let's start right here. I'm a big shootout guy. I think you are too. Where does this event rank for you in Cincinnati sporting events?
It's number one for me. I mean, I've been going to it since I was a kid. I think I did the math right before you called. I think I've been to 23 crosstown shootouts. So I've seen everything from Danny Fortson's 40-point game, Nick Van Exel's half-court shot. I was there when Xavier upset them both times as number one. And I've been, I think, to 10 consecutive shootouts now. It's by far my favorite sporting event. Some people say Bengals Steelers. Some people think opening day with the Reds. Nah, give me the shootout because I love the emotion of a college basketball game, and especially a college basketball rivalry like we have in Cincinnati.
No question. My thing with the opening day, I get the opening day argument. I just feel like that's a really cool event because there's so many people and it affects so many people. You get to see so many people down in Cincinnati together. But in terms of like actual sporting events, no one cares about that game at all.
Yeah, the outcome doesn't matter.
Right.
I mean, the Reds can win, the Reds can lose, and no one cares. They just care that they went for the party. The only thing that matters is if the weather is somewhat tolerable on opening day. So, I mean, I have never done the math to look back on some of the Reds' championship seasons to see how they did on opening day. But no one knows, so it doesn't matter. It's just you go there, it's more of an event, it's more of a party than it is who cares what the Reds did that day. In fact, I come back to the station, and all they care about is what fans did I talk to, what story did I do outside the ballpark. I'm like, do you care that the Reds won or lost? Like, nah, whatever, it's not a big deal, just talk about that in sports. So that's kind of the mentality of Cincinnati, it's a party. Where in this case, it's, man, it's all based on the outcome. It's all who won the game. We all know how many years Xavier's won in a row. We know how many Xavier's won of the last 10. So that kind of, you know, lends itself to this being more of an outcome-based game than just opening day. Even the Bengals-Steelers game, I mean, they play twice a year. I mean, I guess you could put the Bengals-Steelers playoff game right up there with what a crosstown shootout feels like to me. But the fact that the Bengals and Steelers play twice a year, you get both chances for each team to play in their home stadium. The fact that this is just one time, rotates campuses, I think makes it that much better.
Yep. So there we have it. It's pretty definitive, I think. Crosstown shootout, number one sporting event. Opening day, number one party in Cincinnati. So there you go. No more need for debating that. You have so much history with the shootout that you just brought up. Give me your favorite moment. Do you have one?
Yeah, my favorite moment is when Xavier beat number one UC, not the Lenny Brown shot. I enjoyed the other one more because I have a great story that goes behind it. Back then, I grew up going to Xavier games with my dad, who was a Xavier grad. And as Xavier's putting the finishing touches on the Kenyon Martin number one ranked team, you know, the game when he flexed on Xavier.
Right.
I say to my dad, I get out of my seat and I'm going down towards the floor. He says, where are you going? And I said, I'm going down to take the floor with the rest of the students as Xavier wins this game. He says, if you jinx this and they lose this, you're walking home. So I'd say, forget it, Dad. You think too much about these things. If you knew my dad, and you do know my dad.
I do know Doc Daneman, yes.
You know Doc Daneman pretty well. You know he was serious.
He was not kidding.
Xavier would have ended up blowing that game. I was walking home. So I went down to the floor, and Xavier goes on to win it. There's a great shot actually captured by the Fox 19 cameras. Right? I don't know if you remember the shot. There's a shot of Darnell Williams on top of the scorer's table saying that's two times.
Oh, yeah.
I'm right next to the camera when I'm like 17 or 18 years old, and they're looking at me, looking at Darnell Williams. It's hysterical that, 20 years later, here I am working for Fox 19, but that's by far my favorite moment.
I mean, Doc Daneman does not play around. I went to a few games with your family when I was younger. Your younger brother was my age. We went to grade school together, and there was a Purdue game I remember very specifically that Xavier was winning and your father was on call for. And Xavier was up, I think, like 13 with seconds to go. I mean, it was less than a minute. And some guy cheered, all right, Xavier, nice win. And your dad turned around and berated him for jinxing it. It was amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Classic.
Yeah.
There's another game. Quickly, Rick.
Yeah, go ahead.
One more. You're going to love this story. Xavier played Loyola Marymount back when Loyola Marymount was just
scoring 120 a game. Oh, but back when they were awful. Okay.
awful, back when they were terrible. And so Xavier played a late game out at Loyola Marymount. My dad was asking me all day how they're going to do. I said, Dad, they're going to wax this team. Don't worry about it. He's like, I don't know. I think you're going to jinx it. Xavier loses the tip off. My dad goes, that's it. I'm out. And he takes off because they lost the tip. I think Xavier won by 40.
Oh, man. Classic Doc Dan. We could do a whole podcast on Doc Daneman, and I would love it. But I'll keep it moving for the sake of this one. Joe, you've seen both teams. You've been covering both teams all year. Who was the most important player, starting with UC, for UC in this game?
You know, it's going to be – I think to me it's going to be Jacob Evans. I know people want to say seniors, Troy Copain, Kevin Johnson, the guys who are trying to avoid going 0-4 against Xavier in the Crosstown Shootout, especially Kevin Johnson being from Cincinnati. But to me, this feels like Jacob Evans' moment to me. He didn't have a great game last year against Xavier, but I kind of think like he's the guy in the game that kind of has, I don't want to say the cojones, but I want to say that. I think he's the guy that kind of has the moxie, the build, the character to go into a game like this and take over a little bit. It's been a long time since we've seen somebody really go out and score like a 30-point game in the Shootout. I don't expect him to do that. I expect him, though, to make a lot of big shots. And the more we talk about this game on this podcast, you're going to hear me talk about guys making shots because, to me, that's what basketball is. I know we can talk about rebounds and matchups and fouls and styles. To me, I think basketball comes down to making shots. It's a make-or-miss game, especially at this level, especially in games like this. And I think Jacob Evans is the guy most equipped in this situation to hit the big shots when this game needs a big shot. So to me, I think Jacob Evans is the guy that's going to be the biggest problem for Xavier. Not that that's going out on a limb because he's UC's best player.
Yeah, I want to ask you the same thing about Xavier. Before I do that, you mentioned just the, you know, it comes down to making shots. And you can say it feels weird to say that about a basketball game because that's obviously the case for every game. But I think I've been wanting to say that more and more about this specific game, too. And I think the reason for that is that these two teams are so even in a lot of other areas. Like, I don't think there's a lot of other things that separate them in terms of, like, athleticism or their personnel in terms of how they match up or their toughness and their rebounding. Or their, you know, UC's a better defensive team, but I think Xavier's also a pretty tough, cohesive unit on the defensive end. So I think that's what it comes down to is both these teams, when they've made shots, they've looked really good. And when they haven't shot well, be it on the road or whatever, they've been very susceptible to losing to average teams. So I totally agree with you on that. Give me the same thing for Xavier. Who's the most important player for X?
I think it's Trayvon Blewett. I think most Xavier fans would agree with me that there's got to be some guy that has the guts to go into UC and really play a great game. I think Edmund Sumner has stepped forward enough for Xavier that he's going to go out and play well. I just wonder at times if Edmund Sumner just, I don't know why, just kind of takes a step back in a back seat and doesn't dominate a game like he could. But I do think in Xavier's case here, they're going to have to make threes to win at UC.
Yep.
I think Xavier will rebound fine against UC. I think that's one big advantage Xavier might have in this game is that they can really rebound against UC, which is odd. Because in years past, that's what UC does really well. But UC might be able to outscore Xavier this year. It kind of feels like we're in bizarro world
right, with
the way this game matches up with these teams. But I think Trayvon needs to shoot threes specifically well in this game. I don't know a number in my head of how many threes Xavier needs to hit to win at Fifth Third Arena. I'm thinking it's got to be somewhere between 7 and 10.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at the guys on Xavier's team who are going to step up and make a three in a place like that. I think J.P. McCura can hit a couple. I think maybe Malcolm Bernard can hit one, maybe two. But I think Trayvon's got to hit three or four for this team to go to Fifth Third Arena and win. And, in fact, I looked at some numbers last night because I was curious just about how three-point shooting kind of skews this game in the past couple of years. And, in fact, Xavier's won three in a row, and I looked at the three-point shooting for Xavier in these three games of the Crosstown Shootout, 27 of 48.
Yeah,
and those three wins against UC. UC is 16 of 46 in their three losses. So you can see right there, Xavier shot 56% the last three shootouts from three. That's why they're 3-0 against UC the last 3 years. I think Trayvon has got to play better against UC. He's 1 for 10 in his two games against UC, 0 for 4 from three, 5 points in two crosstown shootouts for one of Xavier's, when he graduates or when he leaves, is going to be one of their top 15 maybe top 10 scorers of all time. I think Trayvon, this has got to be his moment. This could be his moment to go into UC and be the guy that scores somewhere between 17 and 22 points, knocks down three or four three-pointers. I don't know if he can do it. I don't know if he will. I think he has to for Xavier to win.
Well, and look, for Trayvon's sake, we don't know. I mean, the thought is that he's probably leaving after this year, you know, after his junior season. He's not going to be back for senior year. We don't know that 100%, so it might not be his last shootout. But it's certainly his last time going to UC, if nothing else. And he hasn't played well either game there. He hit the big free throws to win 2 years ago at UC, but those were his only 2 points of the game. And he was just a freshman then. Now you go back as a sophomore, you get shut out. I think this is a big game for Trayvon Blewett, and I think you're right. He's the guy who has to step up. Going back to something you said about Edmund with the way he disappears in games, I think one of the things we've seen this year is when you're playing the Xavier team defensively, it's a lot easier to take Edmund out of the game than it is to take the other pieces out of the game because he's not the outside shooter, right? You can clog the lane and keep him from getting to the rim, and the coaching staff's been telling him, hey, kick that out. We've got playmakers. We've got shooters. Do what the game tells you to do. And I think that's what we saw in the first half of that Georgetown game is they sold out because Edmund killed them in D.C. They sold out to clog the lane and stop him. And he did a lot of kicking out. He had 7 assists, 1 turnover, setting up his teammates. And the thing is, for Xavier most of the year, when he's been doing that, they haven't made those open jumpers. Against Georgetown, they did. Against UC, they'll have to, or they just won't win this game.
And I thought it's been interesting what Chris Mack said, kind of what you just said about Edmund Sumner. You know, when he had those breakout games, Georgetown being one, then he had, I think, was it 20 against St. John's?
Mm-hmm.
I think it was the St. John's game. He had a big game. And we were asking Chris if this is, you know, the Edmund Sumner that's kind of taking that step now where he becomes even more unguardable and more of a scorer. And he even kind of pushed back against that with the point that you made, which was just make the right play, make the right basketball play. I even saw Chris Mack yesterday say to Edmund Sumner, make the easy play when I was on the baseline shooting the game. So that's kind of where, and Chris said after the game, he did a good job yesterday, 14-7-7 and 1 turnover when they played on Sunday against Georgetown again at Cintas Center. So I think Edmund Sumner is kind of, you know, people want to see him score more points, but to your point, sometimes Chris Mack wants him to be a facilitator, wants him to be a guy that kind of gets other guys involved. And sometimes defenses dictate where he goes with the ball. It becomes imperative for Xavier to make shots. Guys like Trayvon, JP, Malcolm Bernard. Can Kaiser Gates step in, hit a couple shots against UC? Because I would think that Mick Cronin understands that Edmund Sumner getting loose in the lane and getting to the foul line like he's been getting there lately would be bad news for the Bearcats.
Yeah, and to be quite honest, Cincinnati is an elite defensive team. They've played a lot of switching man-to-man this year as opposed to their matchup zone. And what we've seen is, like Villanova, for instance, is similar in the fact that they can really switch 1 through 5 really well and guard in the half-court man-to-man. They gave Xavier a lot of troubles and specifically kept Edmund out of the lane. So we'll see how that fares in this matchup. Joe, aside from that, are there any other storylines that really interest you about this game?
Yeah, me is who on Xavier can make a play in winning time on the road. I mean, you look back at the games at Baylor, at Butler, at Colorado. James Xavier was in for the majority of the game. I know Baylor got away from him in the final 10 minutes. But each of those three games on the road, and you look at the Butler game to me in particular because I kind of think in my head that Butler and UC are kind of on the same. That's probably the most comparable game that we have for Xavier this year, playing in the shootout, because I think Butler and UC are probably going to end up around similar seeds of the NCAA tournament. Hostile environment in Hinkle Fieldhouse. They were chanting things, and J.P. McCura had signs for J.P. McCura, obviously saying things to Miles Davis, too, when he was on the court. So it kind of felt like a hostile environment there. And Xavier just couldn't get stops, and they couldn't hit a big, big shot. In crunch time, I know Malcolm Bernard hit that kind of step back three. It kind of felt like a prayer to me that went in.
Right.
But can anybody on Xavier in winning time, if this is a 4-point game or a 3-point game with a minute and a half left or 2 minutes left, step into one, knock down a big shot, can create their own shot outside of Edmund Sumner, maybe get to the foul line and get a big bucket? I'm not sure I've seen anybody on Xavier this year that's been able to do that. Obviously not consistently, but at all. When they played at Colorado, at Baylor, at Butler, big road games against teams that were hungry to beat them. Can they get stops in winning time? Can they make a big shot in winning time? Regardless if Xavier wins or loses at UC, those are the big questions I have for Xavier in this game on Thursday.
All right. I think it's important before I ask this next question to remind you that no one listens to this podcast. It's pretty much just you and me here talking and a few people behind a paywall. And I got to ask it this way because it takes away the ability for you to have a cop-out answer. You have some little Joe D's running around at home. Let's yep. pretend one of them end up being a five-star prospect in Cincinnati and they want to stay home, play college basketball. Who do you let coach your son, Mick or Mac, and why?
Chris Mack, because my wife went to Xavier, and she wouldn't have it any other way.
well done, Joe. You still found a way to cop out. Well done.
So those Xavier girls are ugly T-shirts. Man, I give those kids some bad looks when I go to Fifth Third Arena. I'm telling you, man. My wife went to freaking Xavier. I'm like, take that shirt. Actually, you know what? Leave that shirt on. Leave it on. Just put a different shirt over top of it. If I'm if my little guys and my six-year-old can ball, Rick, man.
He let's
ball.
Go.
He plays for Scott Rusatz's 6-year-old team. How about that action?
Well, that's good coaching. You're starting him off on the right foot then.
See?
St. Pius is going to have a stud
coach,
next year.
Coach my
years,
6-year-old.
Huh? There you go.
I would have them right now, all things equal, go to Xavier because, and this is not a cop-out, this is reason. I'm from a Catholic family, so obviously that's a big factor for where my kids would go to school. But the facilities at Xavier right now are just better. It's just better facilities. They continue to improve Cintas Center. I know Fifth Third's getting a makeover, but I still don't think it'll be on the level of Cintas Center, say, in 10, 12 years. So, yeah, Chris Mack and Xavier is where I'd send my kid, but obviously it's his choice. I think by the time he's 18 years old, I won't matter to him as much as I think I might.
Yeah, he'll be going to USC or something, I'm sure, with all that Dannemann money. we wrap this up, Joe. I got to ask you for a prediction. Who wins? Give me a score. Anything else you want to throw in there on top of your prediction?
Okay, here's a couple more things I want to throw in. Xavier hasn't lost this season when shooting 50% or more, and they haven't lost this year when J.P. McCura is their leading scorer. So those are things I'm looking for. Come Thursday night, can JP have a big game? Man, would he love to have a big game at Fifth Third Arena. That'd be hilarious.
He said he does not mind.
JP McCura do that.
He said he does not mind the yelling or any of the taunting or anything. He says he wants them to be creative. That's all. That's all he asks.
Okay.
JP
like
has
that.
A fine like eye for the creative arts, and he does not want you coming with weak insults. That's all.
Did he like Miles Fox Morrissey on the sign at Butler?
Yeah. I think he enjoyed that one.
That was a pretty good one. Yeah, I like that one myself personally. I'm going to predict UC wins. To me, the intangibles of this game are all in UC's side of the court. The fact it's been 3 years, the fact that Troy Copain and Kevin Johnson haven't won in this series. I'm not necessarily a one team's do over another kind of person. I just haven't seen Xavier shoot it well enough, especially on the road and especially from their best players, to think they're going to go into UC and win. Obviously, they can. Because UC is not a dominant team, and UC hasn't played a really good team. I mean, I guess SMU is a pretty good team. But outside of that, they haven't really played the kind of schedule Xavier's played. So, yeah, Xavier's been in some tough places. This will be the toughest place they played all year. But I still wonder if Xavier can make enough shots, if Xavier's tough enough to go into Fifth Third Arena and beat UC. I don't think they are. But certainly, it's not like UC is going to go out there and run them out of the building. So Xavier's probably going to be in the game. Can they make shots in winning time to go out and beat the Bearcats? I haven't seen it yet this year, but I know some of the guys on the team are capable of doing it.
Joe, really appreciate it. I kept you much longer than I said, and I could do double this easily talking about this game with you. But I think you made some sound points here, a solid prediction, and I really appreciate you joining us.
Anytime, Rick. Have me again, man.
We will certainly do that. At Fox19 Joe on Twitter, correct?
Nailed it.
All right. Follow him and watch him on Fox 19's news broadcast. He is Joe Dannemann. As we roll along on the podcast here, it is an honor to welcome in my next guest. He is the host of Sports Talk on 700 WLW weeknights 6 to 9 p.m. He is Lance McAllister. Lance, thank you for joining me. Really appreciate it.
Rick, great catching up. Thanks for having me.
All right, let's start here. It's where I've started with everybody else. Where does the shootout rank for you in terms of local sporting events?
I think the beauty for me is it's ours. It's not, opening day for the Reds is against another team. A Bengals playoff game is against another team. This is ours, and this is a city, Rick, you know this, having been here as long as you have. We're always very aware of how we are perceived by people outside looking in. And I think this is that opportunity once a year for what we do well at a high level to be put on display, and the rest of the country is going to be watching UC and Xavier, two schools separated by just a couple of miles, both ranked in the top 25. And I don't even know if those inside of this city truly appreciate the uniqueness of that. And that's for me, nothing beats that.
I agree, and I've always said, you know, there's so much talk about, like, when you get into the best rivalries, and people will say, well, this one or that one, Alabama-Auburn or North Carolina-Duke, and there's so much made up about the national perspective and how much national conversation surrounds those rivalries. And I think that's the one thing that makes me love this one so much is we don't care if you're watching. We don't care in this city if you know about it. We still hate each other equally as much regardless of whether you know what's going on or not.
Yeah, and it's woven throughout the city, through the years, through those who play Summer League basketball, to those who went to the schools or didn't go to the schools, to those who have adopted the teams moving in from other parts. That's the cool thing for me. It just all kind of winds together and kind of wraps up into one big presentation for the city come Crosstown Shootout night.
With that being said, give me your favorite shootout moment.
Well, to me, there's just they all run together, and that's the beauty of it. You can go back to Andy Mack's call. I remember this would be mine just from – it's one of those frozen-in-time moments for me, and it was Andy Mack's call, the game-winning shot. I was in Charlotte at the time. I was on vacation, actually, visiting my family, and I had gone to a Charlotte Hornets then basketball game, and I'll never forget we're driving back, and we pulled into the driveway at my dad's home. And through the crackling of the radio, I'm listening to the game. And we refused to get out of the car to go in and watch because we were listening to it on the radio and the intensity coming through the radio. And just to hear Andy Mack's voice, it was mesmerizing. We didn't want to leave the car. We sat and listened, and I'll never forget. And I can out my dad for this because he's a UC Bearcat. He's a UC graduate. I remember him pounding his fist on the dashboard of the car when the basket went in and Andy Mack's call. I will never forget that moment.
It's how blessed are we in this city with sports broadcasters, by the way, you bringing that up. I mean, just think of the guys we've had the chance to listen to, the calls we've had a chance to hear. Over the year, this city's incredible in that regard.
There's no question. And whether, and, you know, the beauty of our station carrying both games, whether it's 55 KRC or 700 WLW, you can go back and forth and hear the perspective of Joe and Byron and Dan and Chuck or Dan and Terry. And on a night like that, like this, the shootout night, that's gold because you can get the sense of how it's unfolding on both sides.
Looking forward at this year's game, what does a UC win do for the Bearcats, and what does an XU win do for the Musketeers, in your opinion?
Well, I think that's the beauty of this. There's so much at stake for both, and I don't have to tell Xavier fans what their resume looks like in terms of top 25 RPI wins. They're lacking those, and this, you know, it's been a gauntlet. But at some point, and they're clearly tested. At some point, you'd like to hang one on the left side of the one loss column, and this would be a big one. And it's also one that's going to get national attention, obviously from the ESPN2 broadcast. And I think it would be the next piece. This team kind of, I think, got its groove back. And watching them at CentOS Center on Sunday, they scored 52 points in the second half. They shot the ball well. You could almost see it in the shoulders of the Musketeers as shots dropped and even free throw shot, that something was kind of coming back after the three-game losing streak. I said it was huge just from the standpoint of being able to stop that snowball that was coming down the hill. I can't imagine what it would have been like talking about four straight losses and answering more of the Miles Davis story. Instead, there was a little bit of momentum built, and this would be a nice, really nice addition to that. For UC, look, Mick has said it. He's tired of the former players telling him, you know, go win this thing. They have come up short in this. And if you're UC, you don't have a whole lot of opportunities between now and being presented to the selection committee for their decisions to notch a win like this. You're going to go to SMU, but there are a lot of dregs at the bottom of the bottom feeders of the conference. This is an opportunity to put one before the committee and say, add this to the resume. We beat a pretty damn good Xavier basketball team.
with this UC team, Lance, if it's kind of been my thought that if they are able to win this game, I mean, they still have a lot of business to take care of. Like you said, any slip up in that conference could be costly in terms of seeding when we get down to the NCAA tournament. But if they do win this game, do you see it potentially as sort of a catapult or a launching point for them to go and be Mick Cronin's best team ever? I mean, get possibly a 2 or 3 seed and really make a run at this thing?
You'd like to think so. I don't know if the math is going to add up. If you look at where they are in the RPI and KenPom and Sagarin, and you look at opportunities from here on out, if you could get this one, if you could get one at SMU, if you could win the American, that's going to clearly help the resume. But they're just at where they are now, and depending on who you look at, it's a 5 seed, it's a 6 seed. I just don't know how much movement there is. You pointed out the hit you could take by losing to some of the lower teams, but clearly it would mean a lot to the psyche of this team to be able to check off this game on their list, because they have the offense that we haven't seen. This is the high-scoring UC team since Steve Logan's senior season, and before that it was Kenyon's senior season. We've seen a Bearcat team score at this rate. There's wonder of how well it travels on the road. Defensively, they've been good. It would be nice for them, I think, to be able to put together on their home court before their fan base and to be able to deliver this one to the committee as well.
Who's the most important player for each team in this game?
Well, you know, it's funny you say that, because I was thinking there always seems to be a guy year in and year out who hits the radar in this game that maybe you didn't expect or has kind of flown below the surface or so. And I look at a guy for Xavier first. I'll look at Malcolm Bernard, and I don't think he's been given enough credit for adopting and kind of fitting in. He hasn't gone in and kind of announced his presence like, I'm the guy who shot 10 times a game in my last stop at Florida A&M and went 14-7. He's kind of picked his spots and chosen his spots. He's been very good doing that. He gave you 12 against Georgetown, and I think they've been key baskets. When he's picked a spot, it's been a very opportune time for this team. Yep. I think you could make the argument he could stand to be even a little bit more aggressive. So I kind of like him from that standpoint. And for UC, I think Jacob Evans is the assassin on this team. I think he's a guy who, when he feels it, can carry a basketball team. Now, the beauty is this team doesn't need to be carried. They've had a game where Jacob went 1 for 10. They beat SMU. They've had a game where Kyle played 9 minutes and they won over the weekend. They've got multiple guys to step up, and maybe I'm not paying enough credit to somebody like Kevin Johnson, but Jacob Evans is a guy I think can seize a moment like this. Troy Copain certainly can do it, and now I've given you so many names, I don't know if I can pick one, but I think Jacob just has that mentality of, this moment is mine, and when he's feeling it, I think he can give you a 20-point-plus night and be a star on a night like this.
Yeah, I think UC absolutely needs Jacob Evans or Kyle Washington to be that star in this game without question. And I don't know if it matters which one, but they need one of them to really be that go-to scoring star. Is there any other storylines that you're really interested heading into this game aside from, you know, quote-unquote most important player? Is there something else that you're interested to watch between these two teams?
Yeah, you know, it's always, and I think the lesson has been learned from years back with the fight. It'll be interesting to see what kind of signal the officials send right off the bat, how closely this game is called. We saw Xavier get to the free throw line 49 times on Sunday against Georgetown. We've seen UC hit free throws at a much better rate over the last couple of games than they did earlier in the year. I think it becomes then the adjustment game if there's early foul trouble and who's going to stay in versus who goes to the bench. I've pointed out UC's been able to adapt to guys and got in major foul trouble over the weekend and been able to win. But that's kind of like the thing you always have to factor in. What kind of message was sent going into this game? What understanding does the crew have of what this game means? And I think there's a much greater understanding just based on past history. But we'll see how it affects guys early in the game and if it's hands-off right away or if there's a little bit of leeway in a game like this.
All right, I'm going to put you on the spot, and I know you're going to cringe at the first question and not want to answer, but I'm asking it anyway.
Oh, boy. I knew this was coming. I'm going to take the easy way out. I'm going to go with the home team, and I'm going to go with the UC team that simply scores the ball better than they have in recent years. They've transitioned from a rock fight type of team. Again, this is at home. On the road, you've wondered at times where the offense is, but I think at home, the comfort of their home floor and the scoring options they have, Look, Xavier allowed a mediocre Georgetown team to shoot 53%, I think, on Sunday. I think there's a little bit of question of Xavier's defense. I'll even toss in the instability of Edmund's shoulder. You could watch him cringe even on Sunday when he was helped off the floor with how the shoulder hurt him, and we'll see how much he can get to the lane. I think in a long-winded answer, I'm going to give you all of those reasons as to why I take UC in a – I'll go in a 3-4 point game. I think it'll be another classic at Fifth Third Arena, and I can't wait.
Give me a number on that. Where do you think the pace is played at? Like, where are we going to see this 4 point game?
You know, that's a great question. And as much as my head says go lower than I initially think, I'm going to put it somewhere around. I'm going to go somewhere around 68, 64, and I'm probably going to kick myself on that number. And I'd also ask you if we could tape a second version of this where I pick Xavier so you could insert that if needed. But I'm going to go final answer. I'm going to go UC 68, 64.
No, Lancey, here's the thing. We're all going to look dumb together. That's why I'm making everyone put a number on it, and we're just going to replay everyone's predictions at the end when the game's over, and we'll all sound stupid. But here's the other thing. That wasn't even the cringeworthy question that I had. I've got another one for you that you're going to hate even more. In a one-game tournament scenario, you get even players. It doesn't matter. The team is the same regardless. Who do you want coaching your team, Chris Mack or Mick Cronin?
Oh, seriously? You're really going to ask me that question?
Here's the thing.
Wow.
We're approaching this from the standpoint of they're both really good coaches, right? I mean, we're not arguing, hey, Mick Cronin sucks and Chris Mack is good or vice versa. I think it's more of a preference thing at this point. Which style would you rather your team be playing?
Well, I'm going to do this. Ha-ha. Since I'm picking UC to win the game, I'm going to pick Chris Mack for this answer, and I have evened things out. So take that, Rick.
Nice. I like it, Lance, and I'm glad that
That's
you didn't cop out.
That's all I'm giving on this matter.
don't let anyone ever say you're one of the soft media guys in town, because you answered the question. You answered the question.
I'm going to live during... Reddit, at least in some corners. So I hope you're happy.
Joe Daneman was using religious reasons for sending his son to Xavier. Okay, so you went the right way. Lance, really
That's
appreciate
beautiful.
You joining me today, taking the time out. This was cool, and I hope you enjoy the game on Thursday.
You got it. Can't wait. Thanks, Rick. Thanks for having me.
Good stuff from Lance there. As we continue to roll along on the podcast, we got another special guest, a stalwart of Cincinnati radio. He's the host of the Afternoon Sports Talk Show on ESPN 1530 from 3 to 6 on weekdays. Mo Egger joins us now. Mo, how are you, man?
Good stuff from Lance, huh? Everything's relative.
It was decent stuff from Lance, I guess. I mean, I don't want to, like, make
Far
you feel intimidated.
Far more insights than anything I'll give you.
No question about that. But let's start here. You've worked so many broadcasts in this game. Is there a call from the UC side? Obviously, we've already talked about the Andy Mack, number one in the country, number two in their own city call. Is there a call from the UC side that stands out to you?
Yeah. And so I'm going to jog my memory a little bit because I don't necessarily recall the year, but it was either 04 or 06, game at the Cintas Center, and UC is trailing. I think they had a chance to either tie the game or take the lead, and they had a guy named Nick Williams who went to throw a pass on the wing, and he threw the ball right to Chuck Mayshock. And Dan Horde called it as if Chuck Mayshock was the intended recipient of the pass. I don't know why I remember that, but that basically ended the game. And again, I don't know if it was the 04 game or the those six games, both of which were pretty close. But there was a possession at the end of the game where Nick Williams threw it out of bounds, and all you hear Dan say is, and Williams throws a pass and, connects it to Chuck Mayshock or something like that. So I remember that. And then as much as nobody wants to talk about it, the fight call, because, I remember going back and listening to both Xavier and radio and Dan Horde's calls, and they were both so descriptive of everything that was happening. And I can't imagine how difficult that was to do, to call that, as there were so many things taking place. I remember being really impressed by how both guys called it and called it objectively. But, on our broadcast, typically there's disappointment toward the end. So, we don't have on the UC broadcast as many opportunities for, signature calls. which, you know, obviously we remember Andy Mack and even some of what Joe and Byron have called. We haven't had as many of those chances on the UC broadcast.
All right, so that's your favorite call. Obviously, that's a great one. Is there a better shootout moment, though, that you think of a little more fondly, not necessarily from a radio call?
Well, I mean, you got to remember, the hat that I wear. You know, I'm a UC guy. You know, my favorite game, just as a UC fan, was the 98-99 game, which wasn't really memorable for a moment, but it was exceptionally well played. The Bearcats won it. I think they won by 8 or 10 points. That was a UC team that had beaten Duke earlier in the season. They kind of had the makings of that team that was going to go to the, you know, that was so good the following year, that was number one in the country for a large chunk of the season. And that Xavier team was really good too, although that year they kind of underachieved. I think they played in the third place game of the NIT, but that game at the time, it's one of the first shootouts I ever went to. It's the only one I ever went to with my dad. And I just remember the intensity in the building and all those things that everybody talks about that's so cliche. You know, I remember just loving being there. The other one is Mick's first year, because that team was terrible.
Yeah.
But, you know, people forget. I think it's one of Mick's most underrated victories. A team that won two games in the Big East. Remember, they got off to kind of an okay start. They went to Atlantic City and beat Temple, and yet I don't know anybody who thought that they were going to beat Xavier. That was an XU team. I think that, heck, they were an Ohio State, a Ron Lewis three from going to the Sweet 16. They ended up being pretty good. And Mick beat him at Fifth Third Arena, and I remember just being stunned that happened. I remember being, you know, thinking by the end of the season, God, how did this team figure out a way to beat Xavier? And I think, if I recall, beat them relatively decisively. And I remember thinking at the time, like, that might have to be the high point in the season, because these guys are going to get, you know, just trounced in the Big East, which happened. But nobody ever really talked about that, how he managed to – and I think he became the first coach in a long time in a series to actually win his first, which was from a UC standpoint at least, kind of cool. And I'll tell you what, I also – while I'm thinking about it, the Yancey Gates game, the junior year game that he played, where – you know, Yancey, whose career was so underappreciated by so many people, has this huge game against Xavier, where he's making, you know, step back baseline jumpers, and he's just, you know, he's displaying this array of offensive skills that we just really hadn't seen all that much.
The Dirk one-footed fall-away was great.
Yeah. And so I remember being so happy for him, because he was, I think, sometimes so unfairly criticized by a lot of people, even sometimes me, for him to have that game against that opponent in that setting, I thought was cool. And unfortunately, all anybody remembers when you talk about Yancey in the shootout is the fight.
Right.
When, in fact, what happened the year before really should have been his signature moment.
No question. Listening to you talk about Mick's first year win there, I think Xavier fans were either nodding along in agreement or wrecking their cars on the side of the road as you explained that. It just when you were talking about, and then doing the wonderful play-by-play impression of Dan earlier on that call and the pass to Chuck, it made me think, did you ever – I've caught you doing play-by-play a few times randomly when you've been filling in. Did you ever want to do play-by-play? Because I thought you did a really good job when you did those.
Thank you. That's really nice of you to say. No. I did some in college, and I thought it was exceptionally hard to do. I did women's basketball. Actually, I called Christy Max, one of Christy Max teams at UD, but I didn't think I was good at it. It was really hard to do, and I really didn't have the patience to really learn how to do it well. And then a number of years ago, you know, we had a conflict where, you know, Dan was going to have to miss, I think, two games because of the Bengals, and then he was going to have to miss a basketball game because it was a bowl game, and it was his idea. He said, look, you know the program, you know the game, you know the sport, you know how to say that the ball went in, you know how to give the time and score, just do it. And so I've come to love doing it. It's, I mean, of everything I do, you know, because my whole thing from the time I was a kid is I wanted to be a talk show host, because it just seemed like a fun way to make a living, and I wanted to give an opinion. But I've had a chance over the last 5 years, I think, to call maybe, you know, probably in total 15, 16 games, have had a chance this year to call four of them. because there were either Bengals or Bearcat football conflicts. And, you know, you always know that, you know, A, I'm very green doing it. B, I'm filling in for, you know, one of the best play-by-play men in all of sports.
Right, no
so,
pressure.
You know, you're instantly thinking, okay, people who are tuning in expecting to hear Dan, not only are they getting a guy who's not as good, they're getting a guy who's much, much lower on the whatever the list of good to very mediocre is. But I love doing it. And if I could, part of why I love doing it is just growing up a UC fan, and you think, God, if, you know, when I was 10 years old, if you ever would have told me that I'd be calling one of these games on radio. But if I could figure out a way to do it on a more regular basis, I think I'd get a huge kick out of it. And I think I'd get a bigger kick out of doing that than, you know, calling another sport, just because college basketball for the most part, it's not like football where you're up in the press box. It's not like baseball where you're up in the press box. You're right there.
Mm-hmm.
And so to call the action, I think would be really cool.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I was actually the opposite. I grew up wanting to do play-by-play my whole life, got older, and now I'd love to do the sports talk thing. But that's interesting. I could talk to you about that all day, but we'll get moving on the game because I'm taking up too much of your time here. What does this UC – you're so familiar with this UC program. What do they need to do to pull out a win in this game, in your opinion? What's the two or three most important things?
Well, I think it's going to be interesting. You know, Mick has, I don't want to use the word downplay, but he hasn't necessarily gone out of his way to emphasize this game.
Oh, really, no, downplay is absolutely the word. For the last three
right,
years,
we'll
downplay is the right word.
Okay, we'll
trying
go
to cancel the shootout would probably be the better term, but downplay would be fine.
Yeah, it's no secret it's not his favorite game. But, you know, I think Mick has kind of come to understand a couple of different things. Number one, this game is really important to a lot of people who love his program and support his program. You're in the American Athletic Conference, man. You know, this isn't the way it was for a while where you could always say, well, we have bigger fish to fry. I mean, you know, the Bearcats are going to go from playing Xavier to South Florida on Sunday. So, you know, it's obviously a huge opportunity for him. But it was interesting to me. I was listening to his post game on Saturday after they beat Tulane, and he said, you know, we've got to win the game. And he talked about how there's no active player in the Bearcats who's beaten Xavier. And that got me to thinking about Troy Copain and Kevin Johnson, neither of whom have ever beaten X. UC has never lost four straight in the series. So there's never been a four-year guy who came and went and didn't beat Xavier. So I wonder how much of that's going to impact the way Troy and Kevin play, because you could use it as motivation, but you could also try to do too much. And a lengthy list of really good players in this game on both schools who have come into it maybe with something to prove, or maybe were a little bit too amped up and, you know, shot their team out of the game or did something that really compromised their effectiveness. And so I think that's really going to be interesting to watch how much of that. And look, they're probably going to say the right things. You can't tell me that if you 4 years, especially if you're Kevin and you grew up here, you played 4 years, you haven't beaten a crosstown rival, you're not going to get another crack at it this year. You can't tell me that it's not in their minds that they haven't beaten Xavier and that they could go 0-4 in the series. So I think that's going to be really, really interesting. I also think it's going to be interesting to see how a guy like Kyle Washington plays in this game from a UC standpoint, because he's been such an asset at times, but he's also a guy sometimes, I think you saw it at Butler, maybe tried to do a little bit too much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think a guy like him playing in control, and, you know, they're a better offensive team, but they still can sort of take shots. They have individuals who can take shots sometimes that are maybe a little bit out of character for them. In that atmosphere, I kind of wonder if Kyle's going to do that. I also think it's going to be interesting to see what would happen if Xavier gets off to a really good start and there's that noise in the building of here we go again. And for those who have played in this game before, there's that feeling of, God, we just can't beat these guys. And, you know, maybe guys start to press a little bit. How do they handle? They haven't been down in a bunch of games this year. Marshall, they trailed by a lot. But Marshall hit 14 threes in the first half. I don't think that's going to happen on Thursday. They were down against Butler, then kind of wilted. Things started to go downhill in the second half against Rhode Island, and they didn't come back. And so I think that's going to be really interesting. And then I think from a, you know, sort of a statistical or X's and O's standpoint, I think the benches are big. And I think the encouraging thing from a UC standpoint is You're seeing a Jaron Cumberland kind of start to get it, and you're seeing a Trey Scott kind of start to get it, and they've gotten some contributions from Nysier Brooks. I know Xavier during this stretch of play that they've sort of struggled through, the bench has at times not given them all that much. I think this game's going to be decided by the starters, but you're always a little bit, I think, over-vigilant officiating the game, which means if it's called tightly, the guys on the bench are going to play a bigger role. I think UC has to be better in spots 6 through 8 than Xavier, because I think spots 1 through 5 are relatively close.
I would.
That's a long answer.
No, well, the bench point is interesting because I think UC is clearly better on the bench. I mean, they've got more dynamic players coming off the bench that have played a bigger role on their team than Xavier has, whereas Xavier kind of has guys that are just holding the fort when the starters go out. But on the same token, I would say, like, the guy you worry about maybe coming out of the game early is Kyle Washington. He's the one who gets in foul trouble. And if he goes out of the game, UC doesn't have anyone that can replace his offensive ability in terms of how dynamic of a scorer he is. So that really becomes interesting in terms of what type of role the benches play in this game. I want to ask you about another thing specifically with UC. It's been my theory with this UC team that when they run, they're legitimately a really good offensive team. They're very difficult to stop when they start playing fast in transition. They're 18th in the country right now in terms of offensive efficiency and points by possession in transition. That's better than UK. That's better than UCLA. Meaning, you know, 1.19 points per possession and 59.9% field goal percentage in transition. UC's one of the best in the country, and a lot of it's because of Jacob Evans, but also Troy Copain's really good. How important is it that UC plays this game at a faster pace and gets out and run for their offense, as opposed to, as we've seen in some of the games where, you know, it seems to be a closer game, like Butler, for instance, or the game at Iowa State, Mick seems to want a little more control of the offense and slows it down and gets more into the grinded out half court style that they like to play. How do you see that playing out?
I think it's important. You know, I've asked Mick this before. You know, you go to a summer league game or you go to open gym and all the guys want to do is run, you know, nobody's walking the ball up the court, and then you get them in a controlled environment. And sometimes, and this is not just, something that we've seen from UC, but you've seen it a lot in college basketball where it's like, God, go, you know, beat your guy.
Right.
If you believe, and you might not, but if you buy that UC has the better team right now, and I don't know that that necessarily means top to bottom better roster, but if you believe that UC has the better team right now, then if you're the Bearcats, to me, you want as many possessions as possible. And so if they're playing at that pace, that tells me more than anything that Jacob Evans is being assertive. I think this offense comes to a grinding halt, excuse me, when Jacob doesn't want to impose his talents on the game. And, you know, I keep saying, I think this team has another gear, and I believe that, but I don't think they can hit it until, you know, he decides, okay, whether it's in the big moments or whether I can just get to the bucket and get fouled or, you know, beat my guy off the dribble. I don't think this team can hit that gear until he decides that he can do that or realizes that he can do that. And I'm not sure what the correct way to put that is. So I think if they're playing fast, it tells you that Jacob is willing to play that way. It also tells you that, you know, they're deciding to run and they're not necessarily looking to Mick for all the answers on offense. I mean, you've got a senior point guard. You know, Troy has logged so many minutes and played in so many games that if you can't take the leash off at this point, when can you, especially in a game like this? And so, you know, I think if the big talking point is, look, man, you got to win one of these games for the first time in your career and in your last shot, then I think you have to allow Troy to run the team, make the game his. I think if they do that, they have a really good chance. I think if they slow things down and it looks like one of those, you know, 62-58 rock fights that we've seen so many times, then you're kind of putting yourself at the mercy of, you know, things that can happen that seem to happen more in favor of Xavier when these two teams play than UC.
Yeah, of course, this year, the way things have been going, I'm not saying Xavier is favored if it becomes one of those low-scoring games that comes down to a final possession, because UC's been much better in those situations this year than Xavier has. But I do think if it's a low-scoring game, limited possessions, it favors Xavier more so than it does UC. Just real quick, wrapping up here, because we've taken a lot of time. Are there any other interesting storylines, aside from personnel stuff we've already talked about? Is there anything else that you're interested to watch in terms of storylines for this game?
Well, I mean, I think it's just such an interesting game because of how much Xavier has dominated it. I mean, you know, let's be real. When you lose at fifth third, if you're UC, as a fan at least, you kind of assume, okay, that's going to be two straight losses because it's so inherently difficult to win at Cintas Center. So, you know, if you lose on Thursday, well, next year you got it. Just in terms of the series, you know, forget the NCAA tournament and forget, you know, all that stuff. Just in terms of the series, it's been so one-sided that this is an opportunity for the Bearcats, I think, to, you know, obviously you can't undo two decades of losing whatever it is, 14 out of 20, but you could at least start to claim your share of victories. And so, you know, the talking point about how lopsided this rivalry has been, to me, that really gets ratcheted up a notch or two if Xavier wins, because, you know, you've got to assume they're probably going to be favored to play to win the game next year at Cintas Center because it's so difficult. So I just think that's interesting. I think that the way Mick, you know, Chris makes no bones about it, it's a big deal. I've watched him coming off the court after crosstown shootouts, and I've watched him coming off the court after wins against DePaul. He acts differently. I know the game is a big deal to him. I think it's going to be, you know, really interesting to hear how Mick handles the week and see how he coaches the game and hear how, you know, he were to react if they do end up winning the game. I think that's, you know, that's going to be really interesting this week. And so, I think it's going to be – it's my favorite sporting event of the year. It's my least favorite night of the year on social media, but both teams are ranked. The game has huge implications for both. I just, there's so many things that are going to go into it this year, but I think makes it a really, really unique shootout. But I think there's going to be a huge feeling with UC of, God, if we don't win this year, when are we ever going to win this game? So I think it's going to be, you know, compelling to see how that affects the way the game is played on Thursday.
I think there's probably a similar feeling on the Xavier side of things right now. If they don't beat us this year, I don't know if they will. Finally, they got to put you on the spot here. I'm making everyone do it. Give me a score, give me a prediction, and anything else you want to add in that prediction.
Wow, how about that? I will guess, as objectively as I can, I will guess that the Bearcats win. I think that I'll go with something like, I don't know. I'll say 70-66. You know, I think it comes down to, you know, can Evans assert his will, and do Copain and Johnson feel the burden of not having won this game? They've been really good at home. I think it's Mick's best team. I think they're playing with kind of a purpose. You know, I believe the Bearcats are going to win, but, you know, God, I don't think anybody who's paid attention to these two programs and the way they've played against each other, I don't think anybody's going to be surprised if Xavier came away with the win. And, you know, my friends who love the Bearcats like I do all kind of feel the same way, that their head tells them that this is the year that UC should win. But, you know, the list of guys who have, you know, done great things for Xavier in this game against UC is so lengthy that you're just kind of wanting to, you know, assume that someone on Chris's team is going to come back and come up big and do something to win the game this year. But if I'm looking at it from just the direction the two teams are going in, the way the two teams are playing, some of the individual matchups, I think the Bearcats do have a little bit of a better team this year. They have the game at home. And so since you're pressing me and putting me on the spot, I will I'll pick the Bearcats, but nothing in the crosstown shootout would really surprise me.
As I've told the others, Mo, we'll all look dumb together and we'll replay this at the end of the game. embarrass everybody on social media. That's my only end goal here. So,
and by the way, I think that's like the first time in like 7 years I've not picked the Musketeers to win the game. So, you know, I typically get a lot of crap from.
Well, maybe
from,
that's been UC's issue.
So I usually get, when Xavier wins, I get, you know, people that go, well, you know, you wanted to win many, wanted them to win anyway. And I go, well, I mean, you know, look, I certainly don't root against X, but No, I mean, I wanted the Bearcats to win. And they go, well, you said on your show Xavier was going to win. And I go, right. Well, I was right.
Right.
So just don't get mad at me.
I'm a Creighton fan, by the way, because I thought Creighton would beat Xavier.
Oh, that's right.
So.
Rick Boring, that's right.
A hack Creighton fan. Yeah, so there you go. I'm familiar with what you're talking about there. Mo, I'm taking a lot of your time. You're really generous. This was cool for me to do. Thanks so much, man.
Anytime, man. Thanks for having me.
We continue on here. We go from radio stars to TV stars. Elise Jesse, WLWT Channel 5 in Cincinnati, now joins us to talk the shootout. Elise, thank you for joining us. Let's start here. You're a local girl. I know you moved away for some time, but tell me, where does the shootout rank for you in terms of sporting events in the city?
Oh, in terms of sporting events in the city, it's like a top 10.
A top ten. How many sporting events are there? Hold on, Elise. We've got Bengals Steelers as an option here.
Think about how many amazing sporting events that we have in Cincinnati. All right, I'll put it upwards towards like the top two. It's something that I have to be at every single year.
Okay,
I guess the Crosstown Shootout is unlike any other basketball game I've ever been to.
Yeah, totally agree.
You've got everything revolving around it. They're always, every year, they're fighting for bragging rights. Not only that, but they're fighting for, because both teams are usually so good, they want a top 25 win under their belt, too, for their NCAA tournament resume.
Let's go here.
So there's a lot surrounding this.
Let's go here. Do you have a favorite shootout moment from the past?
Oh, a favorite shootout moment. Oh, my gosh. I don't. It's not my favorite moment, but it's the one that sticks out. I was interning at Channel 5 when it happened, the brawl in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they want to get away from that, but that's the one thing that sticks out in my mind.
Yeah, I don't know how it could either. That was one of the first years I was covering the team, and everyone like wants to shy away from talking about it. But in reality, it was a really interesting day to be working in Cincinnati media and covering that game.
It certainly was, and I know that, it started on Twitter and all that stuff, but that kind of shows just how much importance is on this game. Everybody is not only invested, from a sporting standpoint, but everyone, including the players, are invested in an emotional standpoint. This is a big game for both teams.
It is, and one of the reasons I want to talk to you is because I want to talk to the people that are around both teams, that are in the media rooms, at both arenas, seeing both teams in person, and you're familiar with both programs. Mm-hmm. Who is the most important player for starting with Cincinnati in this game, in your opinion?
I think it always starts with Kyle Washington and Troy Copain. Troy, he's a senior captain. Big facilitator in making the Bearcats go, making plays happen. And then, of course, you have Kyle Washington down low, who he needs to be a little bit more physical, but he's definitely been working on that. I know that I talked to him, 3-4 weeks ago, and he said that he had been working on stuff like that. But he also is the presence down in the block that makes the Bearcats go. He hits those shots like none other. And then you turn around and look at Xavier, and you have Edmund Sumner and JP McCura and Malcolm Bernard. Those guys are really fun to watch. I mean, when I first watched Malcolm Bernard, I was just blown away by how much he hustles.
Yeah.
Like, he wants to get after that ball every time there's a loose ball, he's usually the one diving for it.
And it's really unique in his situation because he was the star at Florida A&M, where he came from last year, and he transferred after scoring 14 points a game, averaging 7 rebounds, and taking tons and tons of shots. And he's been so selfless and so willing to buy into a role as a defender on the Xavier team. It's really been interesting to watch. Aside from most important players, What's the most interesting storyline surrounding this year's game, in your opinion?
This year's storyline, I would say, is all about the tournament. I mean, it's a non-conference game for both teams, but it's also a highly ranked team. It's a top 25 matchup in Cincinnati. So not only is it for, bragging rights, but it's also for getting that win. They're looking towards March. They want to make the tournament. They want to go to the Final Four. They want to go to the Sweet 16. That's what I think both of these teams are focused on, and this would be a huge win on both of their resumes.
You mentioned the UC side of things with the tournament and everything. Obviously, if they have to win this game. I mean, if they don't win this game, then there's some questions about everything going forward. But if they do win this game, in your opinion, is this the best McCronin team? Does this team have the chance to be the most impressive postseason team he's had?
I think so. I think this team is stacked with talent. They're also very smart, and they listen really well to what their coach is demanding of them. I think they really buy into his program, and they get along off the court too, which really translates into how they play. They're a very complete team in my eyes. They work very well together. They do what the coach asks them. And at the end of the day, they share the ball well most of the time in many games that we've seen them play. They're not selfish players either. So they like to make sure that their teammates are getting theirs just as much as, you know, they get their own baskets, if you know what I mean.
Right. In terms of the psychological impact on the teams, we've seen this over the last couple of years, and people always make a big deal out of what happens afterwards. You know, if a team won the game, the shootout game, then it propelled them going forward, or it hurt them going forward if they lose afterwards. Do you think this game has a psychological impact, like there's a hangover effect after you play this game for either team, or do you think that's blown out of proportion?
I think that's blowing it out of proportion a little bit. I know Xavier has won, three of the last four, seven of the last nine. Mm-hmm. But even though the Bearcats have lost that game three games, they've still gone to the NCAA tournament, and they kind of put that – they focus on it the week of, and it's a big deal. It's a big game, not only because of Xavier, but as I said, a top 25 matchup. But I think they're really good at – if it's a loss, they are very good at having short-term memory. They just put that behind them, and they move on with the rest of their season on both sides.
No doubt. All right, so I'm going to put you on the hot seat. I've been doing it to everybody. I need a prediction. I need the score.
Oh,
give me an
wait.
Actual number. And anything else you want to throw out there? Anything else you think might happen in this one?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, this really is the hot seat. I think the Bearcats have enough talent to get the win this year. I am going to say that. I think it's going to be a close game. I don't think it's going to be a blowout on either account. But then again, it's hard to say because Xavier and UC always play each other so tough. It's like they play a level above what they would typically play at. I think it's going to be a close one. I think it's going to be probably because both teams are really great defenders. I don't think it's going to be a super high scoring game at all. I think it's going to be maybe a 61-58 or 59 win.
Yeah, I think that's been the most interesting thing when I've been talking to people is where they think the score is going to play out. Everyone's picked UC so far that I've talked to, but it's been the interesting thing to me is, do they think the game's going to be played up by the 70s, or do they think the game's going to be played, you know, low 60s or even 50s? That's kind of been the interesting key to me, and I think that matters. I think it benefits Xavier if it's a lower scoring game personally, but I think that's gonna be interesting to watch. So Elise, really good stuff. I really appreciate you taking the time to join me today.
Thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
All right.
See you there.
Yeah, absolutely. Elise Jesse, catch her on Channel 5 WLWT and Sports Rock on Sunday after the news. Elise, thanks so much. Talk to you later.
All right, thanks. Bye.
All right, now we're joined by CBS sports analyst and former Musketeer Steve Wolf on the podcast. Steve, really appreciate you taking some time to join me. You've been in this game. You've been around this game for a long time. Let's start right here. What's your favorite shootout moment or memory at this point?
Well, I think the first my favorite was probably the first one I was involved in. It was Bob Stack's first year, and Xavier had lost 7 or 8 or 9 in a row to UC, and Bob Stack, the whole year, that was the one game he wanted to win. And because UC was always good, we were winning by 9, I think, with about a minute 7 to go in the game. And we had the ball, and he called timeout. And everybody got in the huddle, and he looked at everybody in the eyes. He goes, "I want everybody really tight here. Managers, too. I want you right here." And he got everybody together, and he said, "Look up at the clock." It was at the Cincinnati or the Riverfront Coliseum. He said 67 seconds, and we own this blankety blank city. It was a big deal for him. I mean, it was a big deal for him. He and Ed Badger were friends, but they were foes on the court. And both of them, you know, it was a big deal to win that game. It was bigger then probably than it is now, from the sheer standpoint of for Xavier, because UC was always the team that was a team to beat. Nowadays, the game is different because both teams are in the top 25. So it's an RPI game. There's a lot of reasons to win this game, but that was probably my most memorable moment. Team-wise, I mean, you have individual moments, but really the team, when you're playing against UC or in the cross-town shootout, the team moments are more important than anything.
You bring up kind of an interesting point of, you know, the game, how it used to matter a little bit more to Xavier, and things have changed. The landscape has changed with college basketball and all that stuff. Xavier's in the Big East now. Everything's different. But when you look at Mick Cronin makes such a, he tries to downplay this game so much. He doesn't like to talk about it at all, at least in the media. But you know, him being a local guy and him growing up with Chris and everything, him losing three straight, you know he wants to win one. How big of a deal do you think this is to him this week in practice?
Well, I think it's bigger to him personally than it is to him in his program.
Mm-hmm.
He's a UC guy. I mean, he went to LaSalle. I mean, and Hep was coaching at Bacon and then Oak Hills and then LaSalle. So, I mean, they know how important the shootout is. You know, Hep played, I coached against me, so we were in the same time frame when it was really important for Xavier, and UC won a lot. The other thing is you can understand Hep's or Mick's getting calls from, you know, former players saying, hey, what's going on here? Giving him the ribbing.
Right.
But I think as for the team, the smartest thing is to say, listen, it's just another game. It's going to be a game that's going to help you realize what an NCAA first-round game will be. And I think that it's a high-level game. Now, in the American, you're playing in the American Conference, there's not the Villanovas, okay? There is not, you know, the Georgetowns. But there is the SMUs. You saw the environment with SMU.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see the environment for when it was a Temple, when the Temple game was here. But to have another game like the Xavier game where it's a sold-out crowd, people on their toes, you really find out from as a coach, you know, who do you count on? You know, how resilient are you? Can you play with a lead? Can you play from behind? There's a lot of things you can take out of this game because it's an impact game, and it really is a game that you, the guys with high basketball character end up coming out on top. I think the problem this year for Xavier, the guy that's killed UC the last 2 years, has been Miles Davis. You know, he's played really well. And Xavier doesn't have a point guard right now. They have Edmund Sumner, who's working into a point guard. He's going to be a pro player. But, you know, Miles Davis had a little bit more cachet at the point than even Troy Copain. And I think that's a big loss, him not being able to play this year. And then having a guy like Troy Copain, who's playing at the top of his game, his last game, he played arguably one of the best halves he's played in his career against Temple.
Sure. I've seen you, obviously, at a bunch of the Xavier games. I know you've called at least a couple of the UC games that I've caught you on, and I don't know exactly how many you've done, but you've seen that UC team in person a few times. Where's the weakness for this UC team? Everyone I've talked to is really high on UC right now. A lot of people are picking them to win this game. But you've seen them in person. Where do you think the weak spot is that Xavier can exploit?
Well, I think that in this game, there's a lot of weak spots. If these teams played five times, I think UC wins four. But they're only playing once. And I think that the little pressure, losing three of the last four for Xavier, didn't help UC. Because, you know, I think that with their team coming in as the underdog, it would have been a bad meeting between the two teams. Because UC is very good. I think that UC will come out ready to play. Their offense has been phenomenal, but it's struggled in the first half. They struggle to get good shots. Jacob Evans has not been as consistent. By the same token, they could have one of their guys not play super and have three other guys that can just pick up a slack. They are stronger than any team that Mick Cronin has had as far as basketball strength. Kyle Washington inside. They got guys coming off the bench. Kevin Johnson shooting the ball real well. I think that, you know, Xavier, if they decide to play a zone, it may be interesting. I don't know if they can guard a man-to-man. But Chris Mack does a pretty good job of getting ready for this game. And I think that it's going to be a heck of a game. But I think that the two guys are going to have to step up. Troy Copain for the Bearcats is going to have to play like he did the other night against Temple. And Edmund Sumner has got to play a full game, even though he's got that bad shoulder. You know, he did not have a good half, first half against Georgetown. But then he came out the second half and turned it on and took care of the team. He's going to have to really lead these guys because there has to be a leader when you're playing a cross-town shootout. Go back to any one of the games, there's always a good point guard, whether it's Jamal Walker or it's Eddie Lee. You know, Eddie Lee ran the point for UC back in the 70s, Jamal Walker in the 80s or 90s, I guess. There's always somebody that controls the game because unless it's a blowout, you know, you're going to have somebody that's got to gather the troops because it's going to be loud in there. And it's going to be a heck of an atmosphere.
Steve, you mentioned Jamal Walker. I saw him this weekend. There was a little players' reunion at CentOS Center, and they went to Coach Mack's house for dinner. Any estimates on Jumpin' Jamal's vertical these days?
I think he might be able to get over a hot dog.
I don't know if they still call him Jumpin' Jamal.
But not before he picks it up and tries to eat it. I love Jamal, but, you know, I saw him the other day, and I think he and – Dwayne Wilson are probably the same weight. Dwayne's 6'8", big Dwayne. But, you know, Jamal was I was sitting with Jonathan Hayes. I went back over there, my wife and my daughters were at the game, and I went back over, and Jonathan Hayes is a friend of mine, and he's 6'6", 260. And Jamal was walking over, and I said, that guy right there may be the best point guard to ever play at this school. Pound for pound, height for height. He goes, well, pound for pound for sure. And I said, no. I mean, he was little. And he had a big flat top, but Jamal Walker was phenomenal. Not a good practice player. Was ugly in practice. You watch practice, you wouldn't want him on your team. But when that was money on the line, Jamal Walker was arguably one of the best point guards ever to play in the crosstown shootout because he just didn't care. And he's got that Brooklyn attitude, and he just came out and was balling. And, by the way, it was great to see all those guys sitting on the sideline and going to the game, and Keith Jackson was over there, and Tyrese, and get to see all those guys. It was fun.
It was cool. Those New York point guards, man, you never know with them. They always show up when the bright lights are on. Let me wrap this thing up here with you. I've taken a lot of your time already, but you mentioned the most important players for each side in your opinion. What's the most interesting storyline? Is there anything else you're going to be looking at in terms of like stats or just recent history or what the coaches are doing? Any other storylines you're particularly interested in?
I'm looking at the seniors. I'm looking at Troy Copain especially. You know, he hasn't won. You know, that is something you never want to leave. You know, it's like, you know, Michigan when you're playing Ohio State. You know, it's Ohio State when Michigan had a string. It's USC and UCLA. You don't want to leave, you know, a rivalry like that without a W. And so I think that's what you're going to see. And I, you know, I'm always rooting for Xavier. I'm going to be a guest of somebody from UC tomorrow, actually go with my son. So I, you know, deep down inside, you know, I just think XU's always going to win. But if they do, it's going to be a big upset in my mind because I like UC Steam. I like everything about them. I think they're really well coached, and I think they have what it takes to really make a decent run in the tournament. So it would be a huge upset. I'll be rooting for our Muskies, but I think that UC is going to win the game.
All right, well, we got your prediction that who's going to win. I've been putting everybody on the spot. Give me some type of score here. Where are you looking at?
I think it's going to be a relatively low-scoring game compared to what they usually are, probably 75-70. But I think it's going to be an uphill battle for the Musketeers unless Edmund Sumner takes over and really gets things moving for the Musketeers.
All right, he is Steve Wolf. You can catch him on CBS Sports as a college basketball analyst, also a former Xavier Musketeer. Steve, really appreciate you taking some time to join me tonight, man. Thanks.
Hey, Rick, no problem at all. Talk to you soon.
All right, take care. Next up, we're talking to Shannon Russell, now covering Xavier for WCPO.com. Shannon, we obviously talked before the season started about the new gig. We're midway through the season now. How has the season gone? I mean, to me, it feels like your coverage is more robust than ever, and you're at everything. How do you feel it's going?
Oh, well, thanks. I feel like I'm at a lot more things now because I'm not only covering Xavier, but I'm also covering UC. So I feel like pretty much every night I'm at a basketball game or talking to a player from one side or the other. So it's been fun. I've been busy. It's different. I don't travel like I used to. And that's good and bad. I do miss being on the road for the games, but I don't necessarily miss being at the airport and waiting for a delayed flight or rebooking a flight that's been canceled. So I would say all in all, it's been a good experience.
Yeah, I find, I don't know if you agree with this, but when I've watched the games on TV versus, you know, the games at CentOS Center or Butler, the local ones that we cover in person, I've found it's easier to actually get a feel for what happened in the game and like see things as they're going on when you're watching on TV, but you don't necessarily get the atmosphere of the building or whatever like you would in person.
Yeah, I totally agree. Sometimes I'm just watching the game and you're kind of like you're sitting on your couch or whatever and you're watching it and you're like, it's so easy to see a play unfold or you can see why something broke down. Whereas when you're sitting, you know, courtside, you're kind of on top of it. And depending on the arena, they don't show replays of things. So you just get one shot to see it. And when you're tweeting and trying to write a live gamer that goes at the buzzer, I think you kind of miss a lot when you're there. So it's been nice to sit back a little bit and watch it from a different perspective because I completely agree. You just see it. You see it a little differently.
Yeah, it's funny. Once you start actually like covering from that courtside perspective, you get a new appreciation for when coaches answer your question with, well, I need to watch the film first. And you're like, well, I kind of get why.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't see it
either.
Yeah, me too.
Exactly. It used to be kind of like, oh, you're just kind of blowing me off there with that answer. But now I'm like, no, you're really – that's true.
Yeah. All right. So you do – you're covering a lot of different things, and obviously you've covered plenty of other big events in this city. Where does the shootout rank for you in terms of local sporting events?
Oh, it's up there. It's got to be – I'd say it's probably number one. It's my favorite thing to go to every year. It's my second favorite day in basketball after Selection Sunday. But as far as game goes, I just think the atmosphere is so fun. You know, it's just like everyone cares about it. You know, it's a big game. And, of course, this year, as in many years, the stakes are really high for both teams. So it means something. So to me, it's just kind of it's a cool thing the city has, and I really enjoy going to it. And I'm very happy it's back on campus sites because you just something was lost in the translation when it was U.S. Bank. So thank goodness it's, you know, here to stay at the school arenas. And, you know, I'm looking forward to this Thursday's contest. I think it'll be a good one.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more on all fronts there. You've covered a lot of them now. What's your favorite shootout moment? Do you have one?
My favorite moment? Oh,
yeah.
God.
I mean, not necessarily that you're cheering for either team, but just anything that stands out to you in terms of a memory.
You know what stands out to me is the game at the last one at UC, because D. Davis, who, you know, used to shoot those high-arcing three-pointers
right.
It took like 10 minutes to drop from the sky, he went 5 for 5, I believe, from the perimeter in that game.
Yep.
And just really killed it. And then I think, if I'm not mistaken, it came down to the end where Trayvon blew it, had to go to the free throw line, and I think that UC was up by 1 point, and there was just a handful of seconds left.
Yeah,
and Trayvon made both shots that gave Xavier the lead, and then they held on to it, added to it, I think, a little bit. But that was just a fun game and kind of an unexpected performance by D. And, you know, they always say that seniors play well in this game, and in that case, it certainly was true. So I really thought that was a good one.
Yeah, and he had came into that game. I think he was shooting in the teens in Big East play in terms of his three-point percentage. Like, he was shooting, like, 17%, because Mick mentioned that in the post game. I remember where he's like, you've got a guy shooting 17% who goes 5 for 5. And we were all laughing, like, I mean, come on, man. It's a senior in the shootout. You can't leave him open just because
exactly.
He was shooting poorly. So looking just forward to this year's game, You've covered both teams in person and seen a lot of both. Talking to the players, the coaches. Mm-hmm. You've got a feel for both. Who is the most important player for starting with UC in this game on Thursday night, in your opinion?
I think Troy Copain. And I normally earlier this week or last week, I was thinking more it was going to be kind of a Kyle Washington, you know, front court thing, because I do feel like the front court competition is going to be a big part of that game. But Troy, you know, as the point guard, is the offensive engineer, and he's played so well. And I think that this means a lot to him as well, because he's a senior, fourth-year player on the team, never won a shootout, kind of has a beef with that, as you would expect. And I think that how well he plays, you know, especially against Edmund Sumner, will be a big difference for UC. And I just think kind of intangible, you know, his desire to win this game, you know, go out on a high note against Xavier, and the fact that he has been playing so well, I think that's kind of going to be a big part of this game.
Yeah, I can see that. And I also think, too, he hasn't shot really well this whole year, but he started to shoot better recently. And he's had a couple big scoring nights. And I feel like if he's on and hitting jumpers, it really becomes difficult for Xavier to beat this UC team. Whereas, you know, if he's struggling and not giving them points, it makes it a little easier if Edmund can gain a big advantage there. Let's flip it to the Xavier side of things. Who do you see as the most important player for Xavier in this matchup?
I feel like Trayvon Blewett, and it might be too easy to say that, because I think that if he's, as a team scoring leader, he's got to continue doing that. And if he can't make three-pointers like he did against in the last game against Georgetown, but struggled the two games before that, if he goes cold or if he can't make a big shot at a timely moment, then that's not going to obviously bode well for Xavier. I think that, you know, he needs to have like that leadership on the court, especially because the team has kind of had so many hard things to go through the last couple of weeks. He needs to go out there and like just kind of be the leader and do what he does best and not have an off game and not kind of wilt under the crazy pressure and the crazy crowd that's going to be saying whatever they want. You know, like he needs to have a really good game and not force shots, because he tends to do that as well. I find when he's trying to like pull change the game. So I think he's a big part of it as well.
I was talking to Joe Dannemann about that earlier, and we were just talking about Trayvon hasn't played well in any of the shootouts either. You know, he made those free throws at the end of the game his freshman year, but those were his first points of the game. And then last year, he didn't shoot well either at the CentOS Center, even though Xavier won. So I think this is a big game for him. And clearly it's huge for Xavier, whichever way he goes, that they tend to go a lot of times in terms of he needs to at least score. And then if he can make the threes as well, it gives Xavier a much better chance to win the game. Aside from the individual players, is there another storyline that interests you about this? I mean, not necessarily the most important player, but just like a certain matchup or a certain statistic or anything about the kind of recent history of the games or anything that interests you the most?
I think I kind of like touched on it before, but I just think that the front court battle is really going to be big. And I don't know how it's going to go. I feel like with UC, you know, if Kyle Washington stays out of foul trouble, which has been a problem, he's the guy that's going to be tough for Xavier. I wonder, you know, as well, Rasheed Gaston and Malcolm Bernard have never played in a shootout. And I understand that that's like not the be all and end all of who's going to win a game. But, you know, they were pretty confident going into Villanova as well. And then when you actually play a team that's really good, I'm not saying that UC is as good as Villanova. I'm just saying, like, you know, you're getting this, like, tough atmosphere against a tough team that really wants to beat you. It's a little different in practice than on paper. So I'm a little concerned more from the front court perspective of, you know, Rasheed, and then you have Sean, and then Tyreek. I don't know how much he can even contribute. But just how Xavier's front court fares against maybe a more experienced front court at UC, and kind of how that plays out and how that affects the game, and whether it changes like kind of the I guess complexion of the whole game, depending on how proficient UC is, you know, in that regard.
Yeah, and that seems to be a common theme with the people I've been talking to, is that front court battle. I think a lot of people feel that's where UC could gain a big advantage. And I certainly understand that on the offensive end. At the same time, I look at the rebounding, and UC is a terrible defensive rebounding team, and Xavier's really good on the glass. So I think that's another way to look at it, too. You know, will Xavier's toughness play a role against UC's front court? And Kyle Washington struggles with guys that bully him, and he gets in foul trouble. So if he's not on the court, what does UC do? You know, because they have a lot of depth at the post, but certainly guys that aren't nearly as dynamic as Kyle is offensively.
Right.
Yeah, just looking at the – we've seen it – I mean, obviously, I think everyone looks at the brawl year, and they look at what happened in the aftermath of that, and they make a lot out of the psychological effects of that year's game. How much do you buy into the shootout having a psychological impact on the teams one way or the other? Because I think I've heard before people say, you know, the team that wins the game usually does worse afterwards, or I've heard people say, well, it's a big momentum game where you win it and – you know, it propels you or whatever. So do you think it has any type of impact on the teams, or do you think it's people make too much of it?
I think that there's probably, I mean, I guess you could probably make an argument either way, but I really think that it's kind of like a, limited to that night. Now, it's going to be great, you know, if Xavier wins, great for them, great to get a win on the road. It will give them some momentum going into their next game. But I think that in this day and age, everything's kind of so isolated to the next game and looking at it one thing, you know, at a time, kind of the whole cliche of one game at a time. I don't know. I feel like the brawl was specifically impacted because guys were suspended from it, and it was everything kind of went back to that one thing. Whereas, you know, if it's just a game and it's a win or a loss and you leave, you know, it's more of a, hey, we beat UC this year or we beat Xavier this year, then you kind of like move on to the next thing. And with Xavier, they have so many more big games on the schedule. You know, it's just, I don't know if it did carry over that far, that would be kind of crazy because they still have, you know, to host Villanova on their court here in the next month. So I don't know. I don't really think the psychological ramifications are that valid, I guess.
Yeah.
Here.
I tend to agree. And I think that's been the case. The shootout brawl was such a weird year, and it did have such a profound impact on that Xavier team specifically. And they were a really unique group in terms of, I think, their chemistry and the psychological makeup of those guys. But I think, you know, because, again, I've heard it so many different ways where the winning team gets on a roll because of the momentum, but sometimes the winning team does worse because they win. It seems like people just make the narrative fit whatever happened in that game. And to be honest, I don't think the coaches or players really think about it much afterwards. Like, if you had a short turnaround or something, maybe that would affect you because this game drains you a little bit more. But for the most part, I don't think it has much of an impact either going forward.
Yeah, I would just say, like, I totally agree with you on that with the narrative, because say Xavier wins this game, then it will be like, oh, well, Xavier, you know, Miles left, and Xavier was kind of in a rough place after the three games, and although they lost, and they beat, you know, they won a game, and they beat Georgetown, and then they won the shootout. It was huge, and then they just, you know, they won X amount of games in a row, and so it was big for them. You know, I don't know. I just feel like, it's a puzzle piece that people kind of wedge in there to make a nice story.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Okay, so I think we're at that point. What's your prediction? Give me a score and anything else you want to add in terms of
what
you
see
happening.
Oh, my gosh, you're putting me on the spot here.
I'm making everyone
do it. All right. I will make my prediction.
We'll all look stupid together.
Okay, that's good. strength in numbers here.
Yeah.
I will say that I think that UC is going to win. I believe they'll win 76-73.
Interesting. So you see it being a little more high scoring and them playing at a faster tempo than they have in the past.
I do. It's probably totally wrong.
No.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. I think if that happens, it definitely benefits UC, and I think UC wins the game. But I'm interested to see how that specific thing, that may be the most interesting storyline to me, is what pace the game is played at, because Mick has had a tendency, well, first of all, this game has had a tendency to really slow down, and Mick has had a tendency the past, well, really his whole career, to in the bigger games seem to want more control of his offense, where he slows it down and they start grinding it out more. And I think if you play against this Xavier team that way, it benefits them, because their struggles have been making shots and getting on a roll offensively, but they've been really good at playing consistently tough and rebounding the ball and getting stops and that stuff. So I agree with your score. If it's going to go up that high, I think UC wins. If it doesn't get up that high, then I think it becomes a lot more interesting.
Yeah, you know, it is interesting kind of looking at UC, and I really have not examined their program so closely as I have this year, but they have a much better offense this year than they have in past years to kind of go with their defense. So I feel like they're a more polished team and a pretty good package at this point. So I feel like I feel like the ball's in their court. I mean, that's horrible. I just said that, but I feel like they have the advantage to, you know, in this game. And then I think you add in all the kind of intangibles from, you know, the 10-game winning streak, the momentum there, the fact that, you know, it's going to have a 13,000 fans there screaming for them. I think that it's going to be a loud environment. Xavier struggled in a very loud environment at Baylor. I mean, granted, Baylor, you know, really good team. But I think that I think it's going to be a little harder for Xavier to win this year. Not saying that they can't, just saying it's going to be a tough game.
She is Shannon Russell. You can catch her work at WCPO.com. Also find her on Twitter. It's just @ Shannon Russell, correct?
at Twitter, SL Russell.
At SL Russell. That's right. All right. Shannon, thanks so much for joining me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
As we continue to move along on the podcast, we are now joined by one of the newest media members in the CentOS Center Media Room. His name is Pat Brennan, covering Xavier for the Enquirer now. Pat, you took over basically, I guess, right the week before the season started, pretty much, right? Nothing like getting thrown into the fire.
Yeah, it was pretty incredible. My first contact with a lot of people in the program, the Xavier program, that is, was the preseason media day. So nothing, like you said, nothing quite like a baptism by fire. It's been great. It's been...
I was just going to say, you'd already been covering FC Cincinnati, obviously, for the Enquirer. Give the people some of your background. What other things have you covered to this point?
Yeah, FC Cincinnati was a great thing that no one at the Enquirer really knew what it was going to be back when they were getting off the ground last spring. It was actually about a year ago now, and the demand was incredible. We didn't see it coming, and we were right there as all this stuff was happening. So it was good timing. We were well positioned, and it's turned out to be a great pursuit for the Enquirer, and that'll be a lot of what I'm doing during the off season, during Xavier's off season. There'll also be some general assignment stuff. And prior to that, I put in two hard, long years working mostly in the nighttime hours covering cops and courts. So it's a welcome respite to be back doing what I know and love, which is sports.
There you go. You've obviously been covering Xavier. You've been covering a little bit of UC even this year. I think I've seen you at a couple UC games helping out on that side. So you've seen both teams.
Yes.
Let's go back a little bit though before we talk about this year's game. Give me your history with the Shootout. How, like, is this something that's been on your radar for a while? Did you watch it as a kid growing up? What's sort of your understanding of the Crosstown Shootout at this point?
Yeah, it's something that's been on my radar since I really got in tune with college basketball, which basically started when I was a student at Ohio State covering Thad Matta's. So a couple great Thad Matta teams for a couple years when I was a student there. And actually, I think a friend of mine and I were out at Allen Fieldhouse covering Ohio State, Kansas. And I think that might have been the day of the big brawl.
Yeah, that
sounds
about right.
The famous brawl. So that obviously, you know, not, I'm from Philadelphia originally. Hopefully people, your listeners, can forgive me for that. I've been in Cincinnati for about 26, 27 months now. But that, like a lot of people, that fight, unfortunately, was my first introduction to the Shootout. But then you kind of peel back the layers from the ugliness of that incident, and you learn what a special thing it really is. So this will be Thursday will be the second time I have attended the game. I went last year as kind of a neutral observer, and I was absolutely fascinated by the game that was played at CentOS Center. The atmosphere was incredible. I'm pretty biased when it comes to college basketball. I think the scene in Philadelphia is one of the best in the country. Just the community of college basketball programs they have in that area.
Sure.
But the atmosphere that I experienced last year was second to none, really. And now to cover, you know, I've had lunch with Bill Cook. I've read his book, kind of ramping up for Thursday. And I couldn't tell you, you know, if you could only know how excited I am to finally cover one of these. It's pretty special. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, for me, and I, like you said, you're biased to Philly. I'm obviously biased to this event like none other. I really feel like it's unlike anything else that I've attended or been around. I get psyched up for it every single year to go in, and it's amazing that I get to cover this. If you would have told me when I was, you know, 12 or 13 that you'll get to cover the Crosstown Shootout, as bad as my job and pay sucks right now, I would have been thrilled, because that's really all I wanted when I was 12 or 13. So I love this game. I love everything that surrounds it. I think it's the best.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of the great rivalries. What, like, you know, I'm you know, because I went to Ohio State, I'm very familiar with the Ohio State-Michigan rivalry. And I think this, what I've come to appreciate about the shootout is that it's one of those where you throw the records out, throw the rankings out, anything can happen simply because of how much, how tense it is and how much hatred there is and how much these teams just genuinely want to beat the piss out of each other. And that's what I love about this rivalry.
Yeah. I agree with that. I genuinely think that there's no more hatred in any rivalry than this one. Like UK Louisville's certainly up there, but this one, there's no mutual respect between these programs. Like you will not find Xavier fans or UC fans saying, well, we really like what they do, or they're our rival, but they're really good too. Like everyone thinks the other program sucks and it's the best. I love
it. Yeah. It's awesome. You know, and like, I saw a lot of people last night I saw a couple people, I should say, certainly not a majority of people, hoping that Xavier would stay ranked because that would add maybe a little bit of spice to Thursday's game. But you didn't see a lot of it, and I think that speaks to kind of the mutual hatred. UC fans, I think, would just as readily have Xavier come in winless as they would have, you know, Xavier be a ranked opponent. So it's pretty great.
All right, let's go here. Talking specifically about this year's game coming up on Thursday, what's the most interesting storyline about this game to you on either side, for the game overall, just anything? What stands out to you as this is kind of what I'm interested to watch?
I would say this is a huge proving ground for Cincinnati, potentially, I think. You know, their record certainly jumps off the page when you look at that. It's 17-2, but they're only ranked 19th, and they really haven't closed on a ton. They haven't closed on any great teams this year. So to finally have a ranked opponent in their place, I'll be interested to see how they handle that. There's just so many unknowns. Like Xavier's been through the ringer throughout the entire season. So they're a known commodity in a lot of ways. You know, in order for them to get to where Xavier media members like yourself and me thought they would be at the start of the season, we kind of have an idea of what they need to do. UC, it's a little bit less so. You know, they have the one win against Iowa State. It might be better than anything Xavier's got on their resume.
Yeah, but certainly, since it's on the road.
Yeah, right. But other than that, this, you know, between the American Athletic Conference schedule they play and just some of the other duds they brought in the non-con, there is just, I feel like there are so many unknowns about the Bearcats. So, I think the pressure has been, it's interesting. Over the last few weeks, the teams have kind of flopped spots in the rankings nationally, and now the pressure has definitely shifted to UC. So it'll be interesting to see how they handle that now that the expectations are probably, you would have to say, of them in this game.
That's interesting. You said the pressure shifts to UC. You mean that just from the aspect of earlier in the season, Xavier was, you know, ahead of them. They were up in the top 10 of the country, and everyone figured Xavier would be favored in this game. And now that UC kind of looks to be the favorite, you think there's more pressure on them because of that? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, definitely. You pretty much just summed it up. I mean, some things have come up for Xavier, and I think that this is a, you know, there are a few variables for Xavier, some things that you would say like, okay, it makes sense why they might not win this game. You know, Ed is banged up. Xavier is a streaky team on the offensive end of the court, and the fact that they have, you know, dropped steadily from the preseason perch that the media placed them on. And in that way, yeah, I think, you know, UC has the record, not necessarily the quality of victories. And I think for that reason, the pressure definitely shifts to them.
That's interesting. That's a good point, and it's one that I haven't really heard anyone bring up as we've kind of been talking over the last few days about this, about kind of the pressure being on UC rather than, you know, them just being in a better position than they were early in the year.
Yeah, and, you know, you throw in that it's at home, you know, there's always going to be a little pressure. You know, the things you'd expect for any rivalry game, you know, it's at home, it's going to be in front of them, you know, a mostly UC crowd, in addition to the fact that, you know, stuff that we've just mentioned. So
yeah, their seniors have lost three straight, you know, eight, all that stuff. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff mounting there. That's a pretty interesting point. Let's go. You've seen both teams in person. So who's the most important player for UC and who's the most important player for Xavier in this game, in your opinion?
For UC, I think Troy Copain has to be on, period. I don't know that there's a whole lot else that needs to be said there. Like I mentioned, I think these are two teams that are really streaky offensively, or they can be. So I think if Troy's on, that's a problem. That's going to probably be a problem for Xavier. Xavier, I can certainly speak to who I think is going to be essential for them. I'm going to go off the board for this pick, though, because I think there's probably a mismatch in this game in the front court that favors UC. So I'm going to say that Rashid Gaston might be a guy. Rashid Gaston might be a guy that, if you know, you and I and your listeners know about the problems Xavier's had feeding the Musketeers post players. But if they can get him the ball, I think that's a guy who could really crack this game wide open, because, you know, Trayvon is coming out of his slump. Ed, even though he's injured, and, you know, JP, these are all known commodities. I think someone that could surprise UC potentially, and certainly someone that's due for another big night. I think Rashid could be that guy for Xavier.
Yeah, and I mean, it's interesting because when you think about, I think you're right that UC, one of the mismatches, or maybe not even a mismatch, but one of the matchups you just worry about is Kyle Washington against Rashid Gaston. And it's not necessarily because of anything that, like, he's going to dominate Rashid anyway, but just the fact that Kyle is such an important player to their offense. And when he gets going offensively, there's not a lot you can do to stop him because he has a very unique game. It's a lot of, like, throwing and flipping the ball up at the basket from 7 feet away, which is, as a post player defensively, I don't really know how you stop that. It's kind of like a spinning little hook shot that, and he can do it from, you know, he doesn't need to be right under the basket to do it. So it's not like you can force him off the block and stop him when he's hitting shots. But the flip side of that is he's not good on the glass. He's not good defensively. He fouls a lot. So to your point, if Xavier can get Rashid involved and get Kyle in foul trouble, that, or he just scoring and Mick gets tired of watching Kyle get scored on, that could, you're right. I mean, that could really change this game. Okay, let's wrap this thing up. Give me your prediction. Who wins? What's the score? And anything else you want to add to that?
I'm expecting a little bit of a cagey game. Like I said, I think both of these teams have the potential. You know, Sunday, for instance, Xavier goes a combined 14 minutes without a field goal over two droughts. I mean, that's ridiculous. UC can be streaky as well. So I'm expecting a cagey, low-scoring game. Could be in the 50s or 60s. And because of Ed's shoulder, I want to give the edge to UC. Maybe 65-60.
All right.
That's what I'm thinking.
And anything else to add to before we wrap it up, just to this game and your overall thoughts or anything you've seen as you've been looking at it?
You know, just looking over the rosters right now. I mean, I think that's about it. Like, I didn't really expand on Troy Copain much, but I think he's, you know, I think that's someone I'm not – you might have a better idea than I would how they'll match up guard-wise. I don't know who will be on Troy, but certainly if Ed finds himself matched up with Troy, I think the shoulder again could prove problematic there.
Yeah,
I'm certainly they'll see bits of each other at, you know, at least a couple of points along the way, you would think. So
I think it will be Ed, if I had to guess, because I think you go JP on Kevin Johnson because he's the least of a threat in terms of their offensive personnel. And then Jacob Evans is their best offensive player. So you put Malcolm, who's your best defender, on him and the most similar body type. So, yeah, I think it matches up pretty straightforward. I think you're right. It'll be Edmund on Troy.
Yeah, and that, you know, Gary, yeah, I worry about that matchup. I'm, you know, not to harp on Ed's shoulder. I mean, he still managed to hurt Georgetown in a pretty meaningful way, even with the shoulder on Sunday, right?
Yeah.
So you wonder how much of an issue is it really, but we'll see how it goes. Chris Mack has said that, you know, the recipe for Ed right now is not, you know, to leave him out of practice. And, you know, they need him on the floor. They need him practicing. So by nature of that, the shoulder is going to continue to flare up. So I think the game might be riding on Edmund Sumner's left shoulder. However healthy they can keep that throughout this week, a lot might ride on that, and certainly that'll factor into the matchup between him and Copain.
He is Pat Brennan, Xavier beat writer for Cincinnati Enquirer. Catch his work, cincinnati.com. You can also what's your Twitter handle? Give the people your Twitter handle as well.
Oh, thank you so much. It's at P Brennan, BrennanENQ.
There you go. Pat, thanks so much for joining me, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Rick.
As we continue on the podcast, we welcome in sports anchor at Channel 5, WLWT. He is George Vogel. George, appreciate you joining us on the podcast tonight. You've been in this city covering this deal for so long now. Give me your best shootout story.
Oh, let's see. Well, it's got to be probably the non-handshake with Huggins and Gillen, as far as I'm concerned. I know a lot of people might point to that fight 5 years ago, but what happened that night with, you know, there was a little bit of tension between those two coaches, and you knew Huggs had a tendency to get a little bit hot at times. And that was where what was a nice little rivalry and seemed to be always good sportsmanship turned into what we saw develop over the next 15 to 20 years, and that was a pretty nasty rivalry. They used to play nice, I think, back in the day, or a little nicer, and it seemed like that took it to another level, and they've never looked back.
Do you think it matters at all? Shannon Russell kind of brought this point up in a post-game press conference after Xavier beat Georgetown on Sunday. Asked the players, you know, if they knew any of the UC players currently, if they played any open gyms or anything. And I mean, even just a few years ago, going back to the brawl, Yancey Gates, and part of it was maybe he was a Cincinnati guy who was comfortable going across town, but like Yancey Gates, Kashmir Wright, all those guys would play open gym at Xavier with Two Holloway, Mark Lyons. They all knew each other. Kenny Freeze, all of them knew each other, had kind of some interaction. None of the current guys on the teams know each other at all. Like, there are zero connections or relationships according to both sides. Do you think that matters at all or takes anything away from the rivalry?
I think it might take a little bit of that heat out of it. Yeah. I mean, I know it's still, you know, once you get in that atmosphere, maybe it doesn't matter all that much because it is a wild atmosphere. But I think that got to be, you know, part of what drove this thing and made it what it was, because as long as I was covering it, these guys did kind of know each other, even back, you know, in the mid-80s. They ran across each other in summer leagues or games around town, and there were, you know, pickup situations like you were talking about. And I think that does – I don't know how much it takes away from it, because maybe it's more just the players notice that. But I think maybe once they get in that atmosphere, maybe it doesn't matter. But it's certainly – I think the ability to have problems was there when they played against each other at other times, because we saw what happened with Yancey and Kenny Freeze, and they had –
Right.
They had
history
before, mm-hmm. playing AAU and other things and knowing each other around town. There was a history there. So I think maybe it takes some of that potential out of it, that there's going to be fireworks like we saw 5 years ago. But I do know that these players, when they get in that environment, it doesn't matter if they're Xavier, UC players. It doesn't matter if the game's at UC or Xavier. They're blown away by that environment. They love it. They love playing in it. And I think once that ball goes up, other than maybe just, you know, that history not being there for trouble, I think we still see the same, you know, great, intense game that we're all wanting to see year in and year out.
Yeah, I do too. Cue Mark Lyons up. But we don't do this. You guys do this.
And y'all amp it up so much. It's like, y'all make it an animosity. You know what I'm saying? Like, we didn't do this. Like, this is a rivalry game, like, which I expect from us. It's going to be a tough game every time we go out there and play UC. It's going to be physical. It's going to be an emotional game. That's why everybody came out and watched it. That's why our students camped out, because they know it's going to be an intensity game.
Are you saying that the media is the reason why that's happening?
No, I'm saying the media is the reason why the game is so, you know, amped up, and it's a rivalry game.
Right. Yeah. No, that wasn't always the case, and I don't think it is now. I think that, you know, they know what they're getting into when they come to these schools and hear about this. And I'm telling you, I'm sure those kids at UC are hearing about it. Mick Cronin just said the other day how he's tired of getting calls, you know, from Danny Fortson and those guys saying, hey, Mick, you know, maybe it's time you win one of these games in this series. So it still means something to them. And I think these players know what it means in this city. And if they don't, they find out right away the minute they play their first one.
That's right. And so much of the focus when we talk about this game is on, you know, the fan bases and the overall context and history of the game and what it means for the rivalry. But in reality, for these teams, it matters what's going on right now, you know, the current season for each team. So in that context, what does a UC win do for the Bearcats and vice versa? What would a XU win do for the Musketeers in this season?
Well, I think for UC, look, it's their last chance other than maybe SMU coming in later, but it's their last chance for a top 25 win. I mean, it's their biggest game left on the slate. And, you know, if they only drop another game or two along the way, they should still get a decent seed. But if they throw this one in there, they could get a very, very good seed when it's all said and done. Mm-hmm. So I think it means quite a bit to the Bearcats. And for Xavier, it means a lot because let's face it, look at the stretch they're coming off of. Yeah, they got the win over Georgetown, but, you know, three straight quality teams. Now they've got another ranked team they can go up against. And they're still going to have some chances to get some quality wins down the stretch. But this would be big, almost like a springboard for them to launch into those games and know they can get it done against these kind of teams. I mean, UC's only lost twice this season. It's going to be on their floor. That's going to be a real good quality win for them if they can get it and take it home.
No question. All right, so looking at how the game plays out, fill in the blank for me. For Xavier to win, they need to
bury the jumpers, bury the threes, and not let UC's ability to shut down perimeter players get to them. They need to get that production out of the guards is what I think. I think that's a real key part of this ball game. And look, Xavier's got a history of doing that to UC. It doesn't matter what kind of defense UC comes in playing. Xavier's been able to take games away from them by coming out, firing, getting an offensive flow early, and draining some three balls to get some separation on the scoreboard. And, man, if you look at the leads they piled up in the first half here in this recent run of success against UC, it's pretty impressive. And I think that's a real big key for Xavier.
For the Bearcats to win, they need to what?
They need it's almost like the opposite. It's like Kyle Washington and Gary Clark are going to need to be able to control inside. And mm-hmm. you know, I think it kind of comes down to that interior Xavier defense and the perimeter defense for UC. I think those are the two big keys of this thing. And I think UC's inside game is going to have to produce. Kyle Washington can't have a game like he had up there against Butler. If he does, UC is going to be in big trouble. I think that's where UC might sense it may have an advantage down low, and they're going to have to take advantage of that if they're going to win this game. I think that's what it comes down to, is the Xavier defense in the paint and the UC defense out on the perimeter.
All right, wrapping it up, I'm going to put you on the spot here for two questions, starting with the first one. And this one, it'll trip you up, I'll tell you. Let's pretend instead of being a message board warrior, your son was a five-star prospect in Cincinnati and wanted to stay home and go to one of the home schools. Which coach are you letting him play for? Who's the better coach?
Oh, boy, you are putting me on the spot. Golly, I mean, you're killing me here. Because I don't know what – I don't know – I know who he would go play for because he went to UC, so I guarantee you he's going to go play for Mick. But, I mean, they've both done a nice job. They've both done a nice job with – and my kid would be a slow guard. So who does the best with a slow guard? I'm not sure. I mean, I guess Mick had some success with Sean Kilpatrick, who wasn't the fastest guy out there. So maybe that would be the answer. But to say who's the better head coach right now, man, golly, play. It depends on the year with these guys. They've both done really good jobs. Look, we're blessed in this city.
We really are.
We know that. The people here know it. Yes, to have those two programs here and be top 25 pretty much year in and year out, getting to the tournament every year, we're very blessed. So he couldn't go wrong. How's that for a politically correct answer?
Yeah, that's fair. And honestly, I asked that question because I think it's interesting because they're two legitimate coaches. You know, I mean, we're not talking about a big discrepancy between them. We're talking about a matter of opinion because they both are really good. So I just think it's interesting to get the temperament of everyone around city and who they kind of prefer.
It's very interesting. Well, you look at their backgrounds too, and you know, both coming through the GCL and coming through, you know, at similar periods, you know, about the same age. It's almost uncanny.
It really is.
It's almost freaky how this has happened like this.
All right, George, and finally, I need a prediction. Give me a score and anything else you want to add. Why it plays out that way, any other statistics you want to throw out there. Let's hear it.
Well, right now I'm going to go with I'll say the Bearcats by 3. It's on their floor. It's going to be crazy. It's going to be wild. I think the Xavier kids will thrive off that, though. I think, look, we know that Xavier really enjoys owning this series right now, and they don't want to let up. On the other hand, I see Kevin Johnson, Troy Copain. They've never beaten this team, and this is it for them. And I think they're really going to get this team up, really get them ready to go. And actually, I think they might even settle down and play smart, and that could be a big key for them because they know that's when they play at their best. Mitch actually convinced these guys now finally throw the ball inside before you take jump shots, you know, let the offense work. But don't wait for 10 seconds left on the shot clock to let it work. Start finding things early, probe the defense. And they've been doing that very well, and it's shown up in their assist to field goal ratio. It's very good this year, better than they've ever had. So I'll take the Cats by 3, but believe me when I tell you, it will not shock me if someone from Xavier, and it could be McCura, it could be Blewett, it could be Sumner, it could be anybody, fires from 3 and fires at will and gets hot, and Xavier takes this game. Would not shock me at all.
All right, UC by 3. Give me a number. Give me an actual number for the two teams. Where do you think the score is going to play out in terms of pace?
Well, you know what? I think it's going to be a pretty good pace. I think, you know, like a lot of games, it may start out a little slow, but I think they're going to get after it a little bit. UC's gotten up and down the floor a lot better here lately. I'm going to give it a 79-76 Bearcats. Oh, wouldn't that be entertaining?
That would be entertaining. I'll sign up for that one right now if we get it up that high.
Exactly.
Yep.
Yep. That's, what the heck? Let's make some shots. I think both teams are capable.
Certainly sounds good to me. He is sports anchor at Channel 5 WLWT, George Vogel. George, really appreciate you taking the time to join me tonight. Thank you.
Rick, anytime. You're the best, brother.
We continue on the podcast, and we got one of our favorite guests here joining us now. And whenever you talk Crosstown Shootout, you got to talk to this guy. He is the all-time leading scorer at Xavier. Byron Larkin joins us on the podcast. Byron, let me start right here. Give me your favorite shootout story, man. What's the favorite memory?
Well, probably my first shootout back in the Stone Age, before you were even thought of back in 1984. And it was my first one. We played down at the Coliseum. And I really didn't, you know, I knew there was a Crosstown Shootout, but I really didn't know how intense it was until I actually played in the game. And you could just tell it was just a special environment. And I know back then that game was a lot bigger because neither team was in the best conference, and that was a big game, and it was just the experience. You know, when I walked into the gym, I could just feel the electricity in the air 2 hours before the game, and how the crowd just hung on every play and every pass. It's the whole reason why you play college basketball. The whole reason why you want to play college basketball is just to play in that particular game. They all were great for me, Rick. One doesn't stick out more than the other for me. Mm. All I know is we went 3-1. And I have fond memories of it, no doubt.
Is there one that sticks out in your broadcasting career, like a call that you guys had that sticks out from Shootout, or not really?
No, not really. not really there. You know, I just think it's always very, very satisfying to win on the opponent's floor. You know, that anytime that can happen, and I'm sure that goes that cuts both ways. You know, that's the ultimate. Like when you are on the floor and you got 10,000 screaming people and 9,999 of them hate your guts, for you to go into their backyard and beat them, there's nothing better than that as a player and as a broadcaster too. So I just enjoy being able to beat them on in their backyard more than anything. So hopefully that'll happen here Thursday.
You mentioned kind of the landscape of college basketball being different and that affecting it. You know, just from the standpoint of Xavier has a lot bigger games on the schedule now. This isn't the only one that you have to point to. And I think there's also been a change in the sense that back in the day, both teams always seemed to have a local kid or two on the roster. And then there was also the summer league that both teams were participating in against. Guys would come over to each other's gyms and run open gym. Right now, there's none of that. These kids are all from somewhere else for the most part, except for Kevin Johnson. None of them know each other. They haven't played open gym. Do you think that takes away from a little bit of the competitiveness on the court, or do you think that the atmosphere from the city provides it and charges it no matter what, and it doesn't matter who's playing in the game?
Well, I think the energy and the excitement around the game has really elevated just because the profile of both programs with all their success has kind of warranted national, not only region, not in the city, but nationally. So it's heightened it from that aspect. And I think because they're no local players, as you just said, that kind of takes it down a peg, because, you know, you want to beat your neighbor worse than you want to beat anybody, because you're going to see them around town, you know. And it was really, really important to us that when you see those guys out, say you're on a date and you see a UC basketball player and they're sporting their gear and you got your X gear on, and you look at them after the game, if you won, it's nothing that needs to be said. It's just the look like, yeah, we got you. You know, that's all it takes, man. There's not a lot of whooping, you know. That's just the way it is, man. You just want to look at them and be like, yeah, we got you again. You know, and it's just a nonverbal look, and that's why you play the game, so you can have that feeling of one-upmanship for another year. That's what it's about, man. That's what it's about, no doubt.
I love it. All right, let's look at this year's game and this Xavier team specifically. Obviously, they had their struggles, played three really good teams. They bounced back against Georgetown. What have you seen from the Xavier team in terms of what do they need to do to win this game against UC? What's going to be the key for Xavier right now?
Well, I think a couple of things have to happen. One, I think they need to shoot the ball at a high level. UC has been, in the entire tenure of Mick's coaching deal there, they've always been super defensive team, and they've always been athletic. So I think Xavier's got to be able to combat that with execution, and then at the end of the execution, making shots. They got to make jump shots too. I think the officials need to call the game very closely. I think more it gets physical, the more possessions, I think that plays more into UC's favor than Xavier, just because Xavier's got a short bench. Mm-hmm. Xavier doesn't have a lot of experience in this game. You know, two players for Xavier, two of their starters have no idea what they're walking into. You know, they don't, and it's going to take a couple minutes to get used to the intensity. The officials are intense too. I mean, they're all amped up as well. So
right.
You've got to manage your emotions and be able to execute while playing, you know, hyped up and playing in that atmosphere. And that takes time to adjust. Not everyone adjusts to that super quickly. Now, you know, UC is going to have the advantage just because they're at home. And I think teams play better at home. UC, I think they're 11-0 at their home this year. Xavier's only 1-4 on the road. So from that aspect, Xavier's played some really good teams, but they haven't had the success that they were looking for on the road. So I think Xavier's got to shoot the ball well. I think it's got to be a game in the 60s. If the game gets 75 up in the 80s, I think that plays more into the line of UC winning versus Xavier.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you there, absolutely. Who is the most important player for each team in this matchup, in your opinion?
Well, I think definitely Trayvon Blewett has to come out and assert himself for Xavier. No doubt about that. He is the key. I think when he plays well, it could really help Xavier possibly win this basketball game. Him being able to shoot the ball at a high level is going to be paramount. Him and J.P. McCure, they both are going to have good days from the perimeter. For UC, I don't know if it's just one player, just because they play so fast and athletic. They come at you from a lot of different spots. They're deeper than Xavier. Troy Copain, I would say, because, he's the experienced point guard. Their backup, Jennifer, is only a freshman. I don't know how he would respond in this atmosphere. But, the experience of Copain, I think, is really important for UC's success in this game.
All right, B, wrapping up real quick. I put you on the spot here. Give me a prediction with a score. What do you think happens?
I say 66-70 Muskies.
Oh, our first Xavier prediction. All right. That is the first one we've gotten. Byron's going with his X-Men. I guess I shouldn't be surprised there, but I'm interested to hear your optimism.
Well, let's hope they get it done.
All right, Byron, really appreciate you taking the time to join me, man. Thanks a lot.
Anytime, Rick.
And it's only right that we finish this podcast off with the other regular on the Dayton Victory podcast, the legend Brian Snow. Snow, I've started here with everybody else. It's only right that we start here with you. Give me your favorite shootout memories.
One that I will never forget, and honestly, Brendel might have been standing next to me when this happened. I would have to ask him. I can't remember. The 2008-2009 season, this was the game. Xavier won by 10. It was the Kenny Freeze headbutt game. There were like four technicals. Derek got thrown out. It was crazy. But like Dante hit like four threes, and Xavier got up 20 to like up like 15, 18 points early. And I was just like, but what stood out to me was before the game, Xavier at the time had this warm up that was intense. Like rounds would just have them go baseline to center line and back, doing high knees and just warm up stuff. But the entire way, CJ, Derek, BJ, Two Holloway, who was just a freshman, all those dudes were talking crap the entire time to the UC players warming up. Just talk crap, come back, talk crap. And the UC dudes were so fired up at the start of that game, they couldn't see straight, and they committed like 8 turnovers. The game was actually over before it started. It was one of the most amazing things I've ever seen.
Well, that's a shock that those guys were talking crap and getting in people's heads. That was rare for them. Any other memories that really stick out to you?
For me it was – there are just so many great games. I think, just trying to think of the one game that I can point to. I think it was the game where Xavier came back in overtime when a shootout to remember, I think is what Chris said in the post game. And went into double overtime and they won. It was the Lance Stevenson, Jordan Crawford game.
Yeah. I brought that up with Dan earlier because you were still covering the site. It was your last year running the site, and I was shooting pictures for you at the time on the baseline right by Xavier's bench, and that was the game where Chris Mack and Lance Stevenson were jawing with each other during the game.
We won't repeat what Lance said to Chris.
No, we won't.
But because I don't think that would go well for either of our future.
But let's just say his vocabulary is similar to Pac-Man Jones. Like,
yes. Very Pac-Man-ish. So those two games really stick out to me. There's been a lot. I mean, maybe a singular moment, like when Nick Van Exel kind of hit that half-court shot. I think it was in 94, maybe.
Yeah, he didn't even hit it. He definitely all the way hit it.
Yeah.
It was a 100% hit.
Well, I meant like it was kind of from half-court. It was in front. And, I've never seen a game. It was like, all right, that shot went in. The better team's going to win. Game over. Everybody can drive home safely. It was just like, everybody go home. So there's been a lot of memories in the shootout. And obviously there's been some great games and, you know, funny moments. And it's been good.
You're a big shootout guy like myself, like Joe Dannemann, like Mo. All the people we've talked to today, everyone loves this game that's been around it for long enough. Snow, let's talk specifically about this year's game. Start with Xavier for me. Break this down. What do you think are the biggest factors for Xavier to get a win?
They have to keep UC off the offensive glass. You look at UC's offensive efficiency, it's not awful. But a lot of that has to do with, I think they're getting about 35-40% of their misses back, whereas Xavier's a top five team in the country in defensive rebounding. Now, granted, part of that's because Georgetown's the worst offensive rebounding team in the history of America, and Xavier's played them twice. But Xavier's got to control the defensive glass. If they give UC extra possessions, I think that's when they could come into problems, because typically UC's not going to beat you on the first shot, but if you let them get two or three, you've got a chance. So to me, that'd be the big one. And then stars have to be stars. At the end of the day, it's that simple. Is Trayvon Blewett and Edmund Sumner going to be the two best players in the gym? Because they are the two best players in the gym. Are they going to play like it? Because they need that to happen.
How interested do you – I've been bringing this up with everybody. I think it's a huge key. How big of a key do you think the pace of this game is?
I don't think it's all that important, because – at the end of the day, if it's a slow pace, Xavier's going to be doing a lot of isolation with Sumner, getting him, and with UC switching everything as well. At least we assume they're going to switch everything, because in general they have switched everything. That's going to lead to a lot of ball screen stuff where Sumner's isolated on a four or a five and just told to get into the lane and make a play. I'm not really sure. You know, like that's not a good matchup for UC in that regard, especially if it's pulling Kyle Washington away from the rim. So I don't think pace is huge. And at the end of the day, Xavier, if you look at their numbers defensively, other teams play really slow against them. So sure, you want to get out and transition and make plays. There's no question about that. I mean, every team wants to, even Virginia wants to get a transition bucket if they can get it. But I don't think Xavier is horrendous in the half court, and I think in this particular matchup it doesn't matter a whole ton. Well, and also with Xavier's lack of depth, the lack of possessions isn't a problem.
I'm actually on the other side. I think the lower possession, ugly, muck-it-up game favors the Xavier team. I think the Xavier team has been pretty tough, pretty consistent defensively, pretty cohesive. Like, I think they're good in that low possession, low scoring game. Now, they don't always make the plays down the stretch in a close game to win, obviously. But to me, that game favors them more than the game that gets up high scoring, because I think UC, especially in their gym, if they're making shots to get this up into the 70s or whatever, I don't think Xavier scores with them. I don't think this Xavier team makes enough shots on the road from what we've seen from them to play it and score with UC at a faster pace, to be quite honest. And that sounds crazy to say. And I know Xavier, you know, has the better offensive efficiency and everything else. But to me, that's what I've seen from these teams.
But I don't think UC's dynamic in transition.
I mean, Snow, they're 18th in the country in efficiency in transition. They're better than UK, UCLA. They're shooting 60% in transition. I think Jacob Evans is great in transition. I think Jaron Cumberland's good. I think Troy Copain is better in transition than he is in the half court.
But part of that is a lot of leak out. Pick six type stuff.
It is at times, but I mean, so is UK and UCLA. I mean, UK more so than UCLA, but it's UC is when they push the ball, they're pretty dynamic. I mean, they get more threes, they get to the rim more and get fouled more. I don't think they're great. They don't have a lot of guys that can beat you one on one in the half court, in my opinion. But I do think they have like a good group of kind of skilled scorers that when they're running, kind of work together well.
See, I just don't think Copain's really good in transition. He doesn't push it like that. And then a guy like, you know, Jacob Evans, I think he needs screens. I don't think you're passing it to him on the run. He's creating off the bounce. I mean, he can handle it okay, but I just think against good teams in transition, they're not very dynamic. I think part of that is they have padded those stats against horrendous transition defense teams, like, say, Tulane.
Yeah, no, I mean, no question. They've done it against some bad teams, and I just can't decide all the time whether that's because they can't do it against better teams or because Mick seems to want more control and wants to slow down the game a little bit more against better teams, whereas teams he feels he's going to beat, he's fine with his team kind of trusting them and just playing more free-flowing on offense and run up and down the court a little bit. I don't know. We disagree kind of about what their strengths are on offense, but I think it's an interesting thing to look at. What else do you think, in terms of keys for UC, what's going to be key for the Bearcats to come away with the win?
Obviously, they're going to need to make shots. That goes without saying. I mean, every team needs to make shots to win. But they're going to need some of that from guys like Gary Clark, guys like Kevin Johnson. Jaron Cumberland has to be a threat. So, like, it can't just be Jaron Cumberland comes on the court, the Xavier coaches start laughing, and whoever Jaron Cumberland's guarding is gets run off 1,000 screens. And there's no repercussions on the other end. So I think that's really important. And then Copain has to be dynamic. He's got to be getting into the lane. He's got to be wreaking havoc on the Xavier defense. He doesn't necessarily have to make shots, but he has to be a playmaker. I think if he's not a dynamic playmaker for UC, they cannot win this game.
And honestly, that just hasn't been a strength for this UC team. They don't do anything in ball screens, which is kind of the thing that I think usually gives Xavier the most trouble, is when you have a team that's dynamic in ball screens. UC really doesn't do anything with them. They're not very good at that at all. And again, like you were saying, like, Jacob Evans is good, but I think he's good more in the open court where he has space and can run. I don't think he's as good where he has to handle and create off the bounce. Now, running off screens and catching and shooting or curling and catching the ball on the move, he's pretty good at. But again, it's going to be interesting to see how UC gets their points against the Xavier team in the half court, because I think Xavier has been pretty good defensively and for the most part when they're in the half court and set.
And Xavier's going to be switching absolutely everything.
Exactly. I mean, there's no reason not to. Kyle Washington doesn't want to bully you at all. So, I mean, they could even play Kaiser at the five, I think, in this game if they wanted to.
Oh, there's no question they could. I'll be interested to see, can Kyle Washington keep Rasheed Gaston off the offensive glass?
Yeah.
Because if there's one thing we know about Rasheed Gaston, he's going to be really physical. And if there's one thing we know about Kyle Washington, he doesn't like humans who are really physical.
He don't like that at all. It's glaring on film. Because all year I've kind of wondered, like, how much of this – I keep hearing it, especially talking to Brendel a lot. You keep hearing how much he and Mick Cronin are kind of butting heads. And you've seen it at times where Mick has to yank him off the court and sits him for an extended period. And I felt at times how much of that is just Mick kind of being a little too hard on him, or, you know, just wanting too much on the defensive end. And then I started watching the film on Synergy, like possession after possession of him playing defense. He offers no resistance at times. He has no desire to be tough. He'll let the big men get wherever they want in terms of posting up and backing them down. I could see Sean O'Mara playing a role for the offense in Xavier. Now, I don't know how well he guards on the other end of the court, obviously. But I think Xavier has to punish UC for having Kyle Washington on the floor. They have to at least try to work the ball inside a little bit in this game.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that they're going to try to do that. And at some point in time, especially if they've been shooting like they've been shooting, throw it up and go get it has to be a good offense. Because if they're limited to one shot, unless they shoot like they're capable of but haven't done, then it's not going to matter. Is this going to be the game where Kaiser Gates goes 4-for-6 from three or something like that? You know, is he going to have his Dante Jackson, D. Davis, Remy Abel game? that's something to really watch, because I think Kizer's going to get shots. Now it's a matter of, will he make them?
Aside from all of these things we've brought up, are there any other storylines that you're interested in watching going into this game?
Will either coach try to outthink themselves and do something totally out of the box that they don't do?
Yeah, here we go. Now you're talking. This is what I want to get into.
To me, that's going to be interesting, is does either coach try to reinvent the wheel? Does all of a sudden Xavier come out in a 1-3-1? Like, it hasn't worked all year, but damn it, it's going to work today. You know, like,
I thought it was decent against Georgetown. I thought it was the first game we really saw it work for any extended period of time was against Georgetown. And it had some breakdowns, too. But I thought it was decent against Georgetown.
Well, that's just because Georgetown's freaking incompetent against it.
Great point. Great point.
They literally, like, hey, let's throw the ball through J.P. McCura's elbow.
Yeah, that's not actually the best way to beat it. No. We've seen this from Mick over the years, in my opinion, where he has a really good defensive team, and sometimes he just doesn't trust it. Like, when they completely just backed off D. Davis and dared him to shoot. Ridiculous strategy, in my opinion. Those types of things, I just don't think UC needs to do. And this year especially, I wouldn't think he would try any of that. But I totally agree with you. Like, if they do something weird, like they think certain guys aren't shooting well for Xavier, like, or like even Edmund, for instance, if they're going to say, instead of just playing him straight up, if they're going to go like suit like way under and try to just be real disrespectful and play underneath the free throw line, and he goes 3-for-3 to start the game from deep, they have no one to blame but themselves for that. Your team is plenty good enough to just play defense straight up and play it the correct way.
Yeah, I mean, just do what you do. I think probably the team that sticks to that the best and doesn't panic and doesn't get rushed is going to be the team that wins.
All right, Snow. So unless you have anything else you want to add about the games or things surrounding it, I need a prediction from you at some point. And I need a number, too.
Need a number?
Yeah, like a score prediction. It can't just be like, oh, I think Xavier's going to win by 3.
I'll go Cincinnati 66, Xavier 59.
All right. That does it. Really appreciate all the different guests that I can't name off the top of my head because I would forget them and I didn't think ahead enough to write them down. So for all of those people, Dan and the legend Brian Snow, I'm Rick. Thanks for listening, everyone, and enjoy the game.
Zip them up.